They look a little nervous.
I need all flight crews to report to their designated areas immediately.
Major. Harley.
Sir.
Good morning. Good morning.
In less than an hour, aircraft from here will join others from around the world. And you will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind. Mankind, that word should have new meaning for all of us today. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interest. Perhaps it's fate that today is the 4th of July. And you will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution. But from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live. To exist. And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
I got a jumpsuit for you, and the rest of your gear squared away in this duffel. That's the choice of help.
Mr. President, I'd sure like to know what you're doing.
I'm a combat pilot, Will. I belong in the air.
Now, coming to you from the CD Game Exchange Studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio, this is the Rick Emerson Show.
Well, it was inevitable, wasn't it? There you go. Now it's done. It's out of our system. We can skip it until next year.
Rick, it's everybody's Independence Day.
The Americans have got a plan! It's about bloody time. Oh, it just makes my skin crawl even reciting it myself. Oh, that makes me want to hurl.
I love all the French people, too, dressed up in their black and white striped shirts with the red neck scarf.
Sitting there like the mole. Here I come, God. You dick.
It could not be more cliche.
It's hilarious. I never thought about that. The French people just sitting there with their little Marceau mustaches.
They're like, what's a war? And they're, yeah, they have their little mustaches and they're smoking.
We are going to mine the aliens through there. We shall inflict wine and bad cinema on the aliens until they retreat. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Programming Independence Day edition, so to speak. It's 503-733-2970 if you want to contact us about, you know, whatever. It's 503-733-2970 today on the 4th of July Independence Day. It is 5 minutes and 48 seconds after the hour of 11 in this the month of July. In the year of our Lord, 2007, thank you for coming by and making it part of your listening day. My chums, my companions, my amigos, mi compadres, my well-scrubbed compatriots, my fellow travelers. We are here broadcasting from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. So there. If you want to call us today for whatever reason, 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. That is 503-733-2970. I got excess saliva today. I'll keep it in a box. Keep it in a box until I'm out someday. Till I'm running low. Where is my excess saliva? It's 503-733-2970. 2970. You want to email us, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email everybody else. Tim@970.am, Sarah@970.am, or Scotty J, who's not actually here today. No work ethic anymore. Scotty J at 970.am. I shouldn't make fun of Scotty J. We'll talk about him in a second. I should say, I do believe there's this phrase they use at CBS Radio here. It's not taken care of. It's not fixed. It's not done. It's not finished. They refer to things as being buttoned up. Like whenever something is done, everything is in place, things are signed, sealed, ready to be delivered, they say, well, we're going to go get that buttoned up. I never heard that phrase until I came to work at CBS. Everybody says it. So Scotty J, I do believe, has buttoned up. That's a phoner. But it's Vanilla Ice, the Vanilla Ice interview for Friday. Now, I don't think he can be...
Oh,
well,
he can't come in?
He can't. He's rocking Corvallis that
night. Oh, bummer.
I know, I can't... I don't believe we have the means or resources to fly Vanilla Ice into Portland for my interview. And that someday, though, Sarah, someday that glorious time will come.
Well, do we get to meet him at the show, at least?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're going to hella meet him.
Don't say that.
did people ever really say hella? Or is that a thing that... Like, immediate, like, didn't exist, and then just became a joke. Like,
that's
it never...
That old people are told that the kids say, but they really don't. And then you try to say it to identify with them when you're really not.
Now, stop. There's no need to be caustic about it. I'm under no illusion that the kid... Illusion. I'm under no illusions, Michael, that the kids say hella now. But my question is, I feel like there was a time when the kids said that. Like, when I was about 20, maybe? So you would have been, like, 5. So I don't know. Doesn't really matter. Don't call about it. 503, you know, although, you know, whatever, Scotty's not here today. People are demanding that we retire the Independence Day speech now. That's not going to happen, and I think you
that
know
that is not going to happen.
Although I have speeches prepared for all the rest of the week, and then I got about half of next week's speeches done. Done, baby. They're buttoned up. They're in the can. All right, I got to get hold of myself here. It's 503-733-2970. It is Wednesday, it's 4th of July. We're here live, as we always are on this holiday. But you know what I forgot? And Laura pointed this out. She texted me, as the kids say. Laura sent me a...
By the way, just to let you know, yeah. I have a whole bag full of Independence Day quotes today. For the kids.
Oh. It's hella full of... no, I was halfway to work. This is how out of it I was today. It's two things back to back. We were all a little bit out of it. Sarah was running late today. I was running late today. I didn't bicycle. Today of all days, when I could have slept in and still had a leisurely bicycle in.
I know, I was going to, but then I'm like, well, I want to go to a barbecue right after. I don't want to be all sweaty and
what
hot.
Time did you get out of bed?
9:20.
Yeah, me, I got up at like 9:50. Me, Laura's like, you're not even bicycling
Wait,
today?
So I was calling you and you were running late as
when
well?
When you were calling me to say you were running late, I was in my driveway. I hadn't even left. So I got halfway to work. Laura reminded me that I forgot my Independence Day Chuck Taylors. My Abby Hoffman Chuck Taylors that I always wear. Left them at home. Well, there's no point. We're not barbecuing or anything. There's no point. I'm just saying, that's how out of it I was. And then
Do you want to come to my barbecue with me?
No. And then here's the other thing. So, but thank you. I went to 7-Eleven this morning to buy myself a Vizo because we were out of it here and there was no Scotty. Scotty wasn't around to do menial tasks for us.
Oh, that means no coffee.
No, Tim and I finally made some. Tim and I each buckled down and made it. We made a pot of coffee. But I went to 7-Eleven. Here's what I did this morning. I swear to God, this is true. I walk into 7-Eleven. I go and I get like a meal bar, like a South Beach bar. Those are really good, by the way. So I get one of those, get myself a Vizo, put down my money, I pay for it, get the change. Bam, get in the car, drive back to the station, walk in, go to my office, realize, left all my crap at 7-Eleven. Paid for it, then walked off and left it all on the counter. So I had to get back in the car and drive back to the goddamn 7-Eleven. And I walk in, she's like, yeah, I was wondering when you were going to come back for this stuff. Still just sitting on the counter, because I'm retarded. All right. It's 5:03. God, it's 10 minutes after already. It's 5, and we got stuff to do today. I mean, I know it doesn't seem that way. It's 503-733-2970 if you want to be a part of the program. If you call in, you will notice that you are not hearing the dulcet tones of one Scotty J on the phone today. Our good friend James filling in today. He's filling in the stead of Scotty, who's off, I don't know, setting a bad example for his children by drinking while operating some sort of a motorcraft on the water, I believe. So, you know, so there's that. So if you call today, you'll hear our friend James picking up the phone. But we are here. We're live. It's 503-733-2970. And James, just FYI, as they say, I'm not sure whether you've screened. You know, there's nothing on my screen, on my call screening software. So it's either not connected or it's just...
Or you've just... Nobody's calling.
No, there's people. I can't right here. I just don't know what they're calling about. I just don't know. Maybe Maybe he's followed the example of Scotty J all too well. Maybe what you want to do is you want to leave these calls unscreened for a long time until Rick nags you. And then if Aaron's coming in that day, you want to just sit there and let Aaron do your work while you go smoke in the parking lot. That's the example of Scotty J. All right, it's 503-733-2970. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely Ann Polka Dot and Sarah X. Dillon. Why, hello.
Oh, hello. Let me turn on my microphone.
Hi, Tim.
I bought my first halter top.
It's very
and
exciting.
I'm rocking it today. Yes, I know. I feel a little weird.
Your first halter. Aren't you like 40?
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm 40.
No, but I mean, how is it that it's your first halter top?
I'm always nervous about wearing halter tops because I have the fear that someone's going to run up and pull it down.
You're going to be like in that, it's like going to be in that Dre Day video or whatever, that in that Snoop Dogg video. You'll be playing volleyball and then the youth will run up behind you and pull down your whatever.
I do have a slight fear of that.
So this is your 26 and this is your first halter top.
Yes.
It does look very nice, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got kind of a doublemint twin thing going on there.
Yeah, I kind of like it.
Can I ask a question which may sound awkward?
Sure.
This may be an uncomfortable question, but here's the thing I don't ever really know. I know this will make 2 days of bra discussion in a row, but how does the bra thing work when you're wearing a halter top? Is there like a sewn-in bra?
No, you can either wear a strapless bra or no bra, but I'm wearing like a strapless bra. Actually, I bought a new bra yesterday after Muppet had chewed my other one, but then the straps in this one don't actually stay in, so I've made it a strapless bra.
So you just cut the straps off?
No, they hook in. I didn't realize that they just hooked
They're
in.
They're detachable straps.
Detachable straps.
So is a strapless bra basically just like a... Is it just like some of that like medical gauze or something, but it's just like elastic?
No, it's like a regular bra, but sometimes it has like little rubbery stuff inside of it. This is just a regular one, though.
So
it's sort of
squeezy.
Okay. Yeah.
So you can be like Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz. You can bind your breasts. You can Leia, Princess Leia style.
Duct tape works well sometimes.
Okay, so there you go.
Yeah, thanks for asking.
No, I know. I'm curious. No, that's a thing that guys wonder about. I really do because you're just like, it's not like you're gonna walk around braless. Clearly, that's not you, baby.
A lot of girls do in halter tops, though.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And when I tried this on, actually, why are we discussing this? Oh, no one's listening.
No,
it's a holiday.
Because guys are curious about this stuff. So here's a dumb question, though.
But this one's like heavily patterned and has you know, it's kind of like ruffled, so you can't really
see. I
see,
so you could not discern the features of whatever
exactly.
was underneath. I was going to say, because if girls will walk around braless in a halter top, why then not all the time? But
well,
I guess
you
because you
the
could
70s?
Discern... Yeah, badly. It's sort of fuzzly.
And they're all like, they all wear this like see-through, like,
yeah, that was no
cloth,
good. And it was
thing.
All like a lot of women who shouldn't have been dressed that way. By the
it
way, here's
is.
Today's out-of-context quote from Sarah Dillon. Rick, will you remind me to take my beer bong to the barbecue today? Yes, I will.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm here for. Tim Riley's working in the following stories for your edification today. Hi, Tim.
Howdy.
What kind of bong will you be bringing to the barbecue today?
I beg your pardon?
Nothing. Never mind. Go ahead.
I just received word that a brand new hot dog eating champ has been crowned.
No!
Uh-oh.
Well, okay. Well, you know, here's the good news. We're going to have Steve Kastenbaum today. Steve Kastenbaum will be joining us to talk about that today from CNN Radio.
Al Gore said is arrested for speeding and drug possession.
Oh, I know.
At least he was driving a Prius.
And that's so great, too. He's driving a hybrid, yeah. but the trunk was full of drugs.
Yeah.
It's the best and worst of stories.
So there's plenty of room, as
yeah.
you can see.
They should put that in the ads. Plenty of room for all of your illicit narcotic substances.
A Reedsport man who shot a snorkeler in the head thinking he was a nutria will face prison time. Police are looking for the man who made that 911 call after seeing the priest drive off Highway 26. Andy Carver on the only payphone within 25 miles, which has since been disconnected along the cell phone-less, serviceless area. And we'll have barbecuing suggestions for fish.
How to fish barbecue.
Yeah.
Okay. It's 503-733-2970.
Not just the program about me.
The funny thing, it's for aquatic types of all... Can we all agree that Aquaman has the lamest of all superpowers? Were you a comic reader as a young lad, Tim?
I was.
Did you read Aquaman?
I did.
You know, Aquaman, there's no practical application for that at all. I mean, because Aquaman is entirely dependent upon there being water-based villains. If there are no villains upon... He's sort of like... I don't mean to impugn the Coast Guard, but I'm just saying... If you're in Kansas, the Coast Guard can do exactly jack for you. If you live like if you live in like I don't know Kalispell, Montana, you think the Coast Guard's gonna be able to come help your ass? No. I mean, if you're being attacked by a kraken, I suppose. But how often does that happen when you're in Montana? 3, 4, 5 times a month tops. Is entirely dependent upon there being some sort of sea-based nefarious colossus.
He's got a leftover superhero.
He really is.
It was on the drawing board, and they had to throw him in it.
They had some costumes left over. Well, we've got this terrible spangly orange costume. Dirt Man. No Dirt Man. Staple Gun Lad. Aquaman. That's it. There you go. He can talk to sperm whales. Speaking of superheroes, we got a lot of Transformers comments coming in already. By the way, I will say this up top. I did not see the Transformers last night. How do I put this? I'm hoping to see it tonight. I will be holding true to my promise that I will not pay for it. I will not be giving Michael Bay any of my money. I do believe that by... In less than an hour! I do believe that by the time I get home tonight, I will have obtained the Transformers film.
Squid went and saw it yesterday, and he said it was awesome.
No, it's not awesome. I just know it's not. I know it's not. Stop it. I know in my bones it's not awesome. And I'm not saying that Squid is not a, he's a dumb man. I'm not saying he doesn't know what he's talking about. Here's what I believe, though.
He's only a squid.
No. It kind of ties into the Aquaman thing. Now I'm just picturing Aquaman with those radiating, like... those radiating energy waves coming out of his head, and like Squid receiving a request over on KNRK. Aquaman, I need you to play Modest Mouse. Squid, yes, Aquaman. It's a holiday. It's the only time I can use all this lame material. I gotta just unload all these bad jokes by the bushel because I can't use these when, like, you know, when we're really expected to be doing a show. I just believe that there's been a gradual lowering of expectations for action films. And I believe that this is Hollywood. You know how it's like the government does their best to lower our expectations of what our elected leaders are going to do? I think that Hollywood has succeeded in doing this over the last 10 years. Because how often do you use people, I don't mean to be a big, like, I'm taking it way too seriously. I'm just saying, how often do you hear people use phrases like, well, for what it is, it's a good film. Well, what the hell does that mean? I mean, that means nothing. It's, well, it's a good... Here's the one I hate. It's a good summer popcorn flick. Well, that's a non-statement. That means nothing. That means that you are... Why don't you just mail $20 to Michael Bay and just stay home and save yourself the time? That's all I'm saying. That's sort of like just... Well, this food's not going to be any good, but I can't wait to get in line and buy it anyway. It just doesn't make any sense. So by the time I get home today, though, I believe I will have obtained the new Transformers film. And I may be able to watch it and to give my thoughts. That's all I'm saying. All right, it's 503-733-2970. What are we doing? Well, let's get these calls here. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. How are we doing, guys? Hey, everybody.
What's up?
Hello.
Hey, did you read the Oregonian today in the living section? When they were writing up the Transformers thing, they were totally quoting Aaron and Scott.
Oh, yeah. Somebody told me about that. Was it Christy Turnquist? She wrote a piece about the Transformers, and she interviewed Aaron Duran and Scott Daly about it.
Yeah, I didn't notice who was writing it, but I did read the article, and they made Aaron and Scott sound like giddy little boys. Like, we're so excited, but we're afraid that it's going to suck, and I don't know.
It's not really that difficult to do with those guys. Let's you and I be honest.
Yeah, well, I mean, we are geeks among men, after all. So.
Totally. Well, I mean, it's like we had that guy yesterday, and again, I'm... Don't get me wrong, I understand this. I'll be waiting in line at midnight for Harry Potter like a retard. So, I've no one to talk, but we had that
when
guy...
When is Harry Potter?
It's the 26th, I think. It's Friday night into Saturday. But we had that guy who was like, I'm going to see the Transformers at Cinetopia tonight, and I feel like vomiting. I'm so nervous. And it's like, really, seriously, who's that nervous about that? Look, I know it's not going to be any good. It's not like I'm going to wreck my whole world. Like, I'm not going to be able to face tomorrow because of it. So... Right.
Yeah, it just kind of cracked me up that she was just, yeah, she totally painted them like giddy little, like,
nerds.
Oh, my childhood depends on this movie being good. And it, obviously, I know the guys. I know that ain't the case, but
were they,
it was kind of funny.
Did they manage to work in the phrase, Michael Bay is raping my childhood?
No, actually, that was not in the text.
That's too bad. Well, what can you do? Well, there's always the next article. Hey, not that it's all about me, but I know that Aaron did mention this to her. Did she reference the bet that our program has with Court and Fatboy on KUFO?
No, they did not.
Okay, because I know he had mentioned it to her. I didn't think it would make it into the final article. They've been very good to us in the past, but I didn't think that would make it in. All right, have you seen...
Yeah, no, they peppered it.
Have you seen the Transformers?
No, I really don't think I'm going to watch it in the theater. I just, you know, I so rarely get out to actually pay movie in the theaters anymore. I just buy DVDs when they come out, you know.
Excellent. Good for you, sir. Thank you.
All right. Good day.
All right. There you go. All right. It's 503-73. I haven't even talked about what else is coming up today. Good heavens. Coming at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk to senior radio correspondent Amanda Moyer. I swear to God. She's talking about, they're all at work today. I don't know what goes on at that place. That place is so confusing. On days when things are actually happening, it's like they don't ever want to bother to book anybody. On days when there's real news, hi, there's a real news. Hey, half the world has blown up. Can we get Amanda Boyer? No. No, and I'm going to lunch now. Yet on days like today, nothing happens. They're all available. Man, Amanda Moyer's been there since 4 a.m. Doesn't matter. They'll give us Amanda Boyer. She's covering... Let's see, what is she covering? Apparently some sort of peach pit race in Atlanta, Georgia. God, this country's dumb sometimes. Oh, she's also going to be... This is... How perfect is this? They're going to be swearing in 1,000 immigrants at Disney World. That's perfect. Just warp them right away. Just dunk them right there in a sea of corrupted swine-like capitalism. What else? Jim Roop's going to talk to us about what it means to Los Angeles to be a patriot. Lisa Goddard is there. I guess it's just that National Mall where they're going to be the fireworks show and the whatnot and the hey-hey. But most importantly, Steve Kastenbaum is going to be joining us from Nathan's Famous in Coney Island where they had that hot dog eating contest. So we'll have some of the news on that. And then Steve, who was... He was so ratcheted up about that yesterday, you could hear him vibrating over the phone. I mean, it really... He was way more excited about that than, like, it really, strictly speaking, seemed necessary. But, you know, so there you go. So we got Lisa, Roop, we got Amanda Moyer, we got Steve Kastenbaum, we have Aaron Duran from FilmFeverRadio.com and GeekInTheCity.com. He will be in studio today around 1 o'clock. We'll talk a little bit about the Transformers because it is the big story. Let's see. Oh, more on that guy in a ditch. You know, I had the best tease the other day. Tammy, you were gone. It was on Monday. I had the best tease that I wish I could have given. I wish you'd been here so you could have used it in your afternoon news. It was this. It was a priest, a blonde, and a Toyota Corolla go into a bar. Or, in this case, a ditch. Isn't that funny?
That is. I'm mute.
Okay. And Scotty's not here today. So when you call him, be nice to the guy answering the phone. That's a joke. What are we going to do? We won't have anybody to meet. Nobody to make coffee and nobody to be mean to today. Just doesn't seem right. And with what are children blowing their hands off? We'll answer that question later on today. Plus... somebody asked me if this was, because it's July 4th, somebody asked me if we were going to be doing our annual behind, or if our for Christmas in July. And the thing is, A, I forgot all my food at 7-Eleven this morning. B, exactly how much money do you suppose 7-Eleven and other convenience stores make every year of radio personnel? I mean, it's got to be in the skillions of dollars. I forgot my 4th of July Abbie Hoffman shoes, and I forgot all my Christmas music, but I did bring Behind the Christmas, so I think we may roll that in the final hour today. The final hour of today's program, we may bring back, as we often do on the 4th of July, we may bring back Behind the Christmas, an original Rick Emerson Show radio play. So we'll probably do that in the final hour today, along with some of the other things. So let's get this one more call, and then we'll break, and we'll come back. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
Just, you know, about the lead in there.
Yes.
Too soon.
No idea what we're talking about, but thank you.
For the priest and the lady in the car in the ditch and the...
That's too soon. What, they died like 3 years ago, didn't they?
Well, sorry, they died 3 weeks ago. They were found like 2 days ago.
Oh, yeah.
That's yeah, anyhow.
Crackerjack police work. Seriously, what do you have to do to be found by the cops in this state? I mean, come on.
You know, they've got cutbacks. They were in line for donuts. So
I guess
they had things to do.
I guess it's their fault for... I guess it's, you know, the priest and the guys... It's their fault for not, like, setting their car ablaze, you know, so the cops can find them more easily. I'm not faulting...
In all fairness, to the OSP, the taxpayers, or the people who voted not to give them the budget they needed to hire police officers.
I was just going to say, to be honest, to be fair, there's like one guy who has to patrol like 9 million square miles of forest or whatever.
And to them, after driving a while, a tree is a tree is a tree.
And I saw the photo on the front of the Oregonian today where it's like there's the trees and then there's like a tiny little red speck down at the bottom of a ditch.
Yeah.
Just a tiny little...
You know, The legislature was too busy negotiating and trying to decide whether we should have a state soil. So,
or whether we should be importing people from Clackamas into Portland via that $400 million max line.
You know, they're building that thing. How come they've just now got the money approved? I'm really confused.
Are they already building it? Is that true?
Yeah, it's on the way downtown.
So they started building it before they had the money?
They've got all kinds of stuff built along out there.
Yeah, great.
They're starting here, and they were kind of hoping to get the money so that they could be joined up in Clackamas.
Sort of kiting checks.
Yeah, and I'm hoping to have a retirement when I get old, but you know.
All right.
You know,
how can I help you, sir?
Yeah, the reason I called. The Transformers movie. My son is in the Navy down in San Diego, and as part of his patriotic duty, he went and saw that last night.
Uh-huh.
That is a fantastic movie. You know, and you don't have to be a Transformers fan because they just, like, blow lots of stuff up, and that's always cool. And he's in the Navy, so he knows things.
That always follows. All right. Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Appreciate it. Bye now.
He's in the Navy, so he knows things.
He's in the Navy, so he is in a position to judge the Transformers film. Well, James said that we'll talk to him about it later. He apparently is very bullish on it. I know that I have what alcoholics call contempt prior to investigation here, that I have already judged the execution, I've already judged and executed the Transformers film without having seen a frame of it. I'm totally aware that I am doing that right now. I am judging the book, not even by its cover. I'm just looking at like the little spine as it sits on the bookshelf. I've already judged the entire contents by that. I'm fully aware of that fact. All right, we take a break. Amanda Moyer coming up here in just a moment. Later on, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. Tim Riley with the AM 970 New News Hour. Later on, Aaron Geek in the City, Duran. Hot dog eating contest. Jim Roop and all that. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show.
Wonderful.
Why, hello. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. We're live. It's Independence Day. It's 503-733-2970. In less than an hour, we'll have the AM 970 New News Hour with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. I'm going to use that all day.
That made me laugh out loud,
see?
I have to say.
Bill Pullman has many, many applications there. It's 503-733-2970. We'll get Amanda Moyer here in just a skosh. Later on, Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop, and Steve Kestenbaum from the Nathan's World Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest, kids. News Hour at noon. Aaron Duran's going to be here at 1 o'clock and so forth. And we'll at 2 o'clock, we will have a Behind the Christmas, an original radio play for the Rick Emerson Show as we do our annual Christmas in July. We'll do that for a little bit, but not the whole show today. We'll do an hour of that later on. It's 503-733-2970. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the CNN Center in Atlanta, our good friend CNN radio correspondent, Amanda Moyer. Why, hello, Amanda, and how are you on this glorious 4th of July?
Hi, I'm pretty good. How are you today?
I'm dandy. Let me ask you this. Have you seen the new Transformers film?
I have not seen it, but I would like to.
Now is this a thing? Are you just lying to feign relatability here? Or are you actually going to see it at some point?
No, I actually think it would be kind of neat.
Okay, that's a ringing endorsement. That's the best I can kind of get out of most people today. Well, it seems kind of interesting.
Well, it doesn't tell you a whole lot about it, and if you can remember, if you have a sibling or someone who played with them a long time ago, then you kind of know what they're like. So
it is true. I'll get to it later, but we have many, many, many people, many, many sort of moons orbiting the Rick Emerson Show, all of whom are just, we have a lot of geeky fanboys that are either hosting the show or related to the show in some way. So I do know what you're talking about. Am I misreading this? Is there some kind of peach pit foot race or something happening in Atlanta? Am I misreading this?
I think you're misreading it. It's called the Peachtree Road Race, and it's the world's largest 10K.
Now, here's the thing. I've lived in a lot of cities, and it seems like every city on Earth claims that they have the world's largest foot race. And so, I don't know, maybe there's some sort of shifting sand of criteria by which these things are all judged. But every time I move to a city, there's some foot race, and they all claim that it's the biggest one on Earth. But you're saying this is definitively it.
Yeah, this is definitely it. 55,000 runners took part in this, and about 150,000 people watched as those runners crossed the finish line. People came from all over the country, and even in the last couple years, they've organized races in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Kuwait. So those that missed running in the Peachtree Road Race could run in that country instead.
If I can just inject a slice of personal observation into the story, let me just say that I don't really understand the aesthetic appeal of running. And first of all, you're going to start here, and you're going to run over there. And then you're going to basically do that 5,000 or 6,000 times over the next 4 hours. That sort of seems to be the general gist. And furthermore, not only do I not really understand the inherent appeal of running from one place to another, I understand even really, and I don't mean to sound overly snarky about this. Perhaps you know this because, of course, you are there in Atlanta. Who is it that derives enjoyment by hauling their undoubtedly large American body down to a sidewalk and sitting on a piece of ill-designed lawn furniture and just sitting there and watching someone run by them?
Well, to be completely honest, I can't understand why anybody would want to run in a race either. But, because I had to walk 3 miles today, because that's how many cars were parked all around this place.
That's what I'm saying. Every time there is some phenomenally, unbelievably, excruciatingly tedious event like this, there's like 9 million people lining the side, you know, eating cotton candy and buying things that go, you know, and twirl in the air so they can watch. It just makes no sense to me.
And let's not forget, it is Atlanta, and it is July.
That is, so it's like 4 million degrees, and there's like 1,000% humidity.
It was pretty hot, but you know what? They tell me, organizers say it's been... The day was the coolest start time they've had in about 10 years, and it was hot.
Let me ask you this, and we are fans of American culture, both high culture and low culture here on the Rick Emerson Show. Is it true that they're having a bunch of citizenship swear-ins? They're swearing in 1,000 people to become citizens at Disney World today?
That's correct. About 1,000 immigrants got their citizenship ceremony done right in front of Cinderella's castle.
I gotta have to tell you, that really is both horrible and fascinating and wonderful all at once. I mean, it kind of is everything that is great and bad about this country just sort of rolled into one big citizenship ball. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And I spoke with some people from Disney, and they said, you know, oh, it's going to be a Disney-style celebration. You know, Gloria Estefan was going to be singing. And, of course, you can't forget Lee Greenwood, so he can do all the patriotic songs so they can feel like they're...
All of his many hits. He'll be there to sing his entire catalog. Lee Greenwood is a living example. Man, I'm not saying anything anybody else hasn't already thought, probably. But, I mean, that guy is proof. You just write the right song at the right time. And I've often thought, because Lee Greenwood, of course, sang God Bless the USA, which we will not be playing on today's program, not because it's not a fine sentiment. It is. I'm an unashamed patriot. Everybody knows that. It is not something that is a hidden fact about my personality. But just because that song, here's what there needs to be. There needs to be like a 100-year governmental moratorium on the playing of God Bless the USA by Lee Greenwood. And then crack it open out of a time vault like 100 years from now so future generations can hear it fresh and perhaps enjoy it and not just equate it with, like, you know, like fat white guys with, like, you know, like some sort of NFL face paint on standing with their huge beer guts protruding during halftime holding, like, a hot dog in one hand and an overly priced beer in the other.
I guess it's a good gig if you get it. You write one song and every single venue wants to have you sing it.
You know what Lee Greenwood is? Lee Greenwood is the American musical version of Michael Buffer. And if you don't know who Michael Buffer is, Michael Buffer is the guy who says, "Let's get ready to rumble!" And he's trademarked that, and he's the only guy that can do it. I probably have to send him a check for like $9 right now. So if you go to a sporting event, and Michael Buffer is there saying, "Let's get ready to rumble," like he did in Rocky Balboa, also known as Rocky VI, you know, that guy probably made like 40 grand for that. I mean, that's it, man. You just find, it's like the phrase three-peat, which is trademarked by Pat Riley. Anytime somebody makes money off the phrase three-peat, that's Pat Riley making that dollar. So there you go. And since these guys have been sworn in at Disney World, I mean, it just seems like they ought to be taken on some sort of American tour. Like, we'll take them right to a Walmart, you know? Take them right to a Walmart, then to a Metroplex somewhere, and then to, like, a Men's Warehouse so they can buy stretchy pants or something.
Well, I guess they get to at least go to Disney World and ride on the rides today and enjoy that.
Are these people who, they've already passed their test and their whatever?
Yes, and these are people that have already completed everything, and now they're just being sworn in by the Director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. So they're just getting that official.
How long does it take to become an American citizen?
I don't know exactly how long it takes, but I know that there's a lot of stuff you have to go through. You have to file paperwork. It's several years, and you have to pass a test, which, quite frankly, I don't think most Americans could probably pass it.
And is this the test where they ask you, like, what do the 13 stripes on the flag stand for or something?
Yeah,
one of those,
but it's
one
a lot
of those,
and stuff like some, they start out easy and then it gets harder and harder.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do? All right. So there you go. And then they have that phrase. I know you're gonna remember. They have that one thing when they disavow allegiance to any prince or potentate. And potentate sounds like a men's vitality product they would sell in the back of Rolling Stone magazine that's made out of like powdered rhinoceros horn that doesn't really work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Order some 1,000-milligram Potentate X. So I don't even know what it is. All right. Do you have big plans for the rest of your afternoon, Amanda Moyer?
Well, after I'm done working, I hope to go to a cookout, and of course, can't miss the fireworks. Tonight.
Of course, indeed. All right. Enjoy your Atlanta afternoon. Happy Independence Day to you, and we'll talk to you soon, Amanda.
Same to you.
Thank you so much. There you go. There's Amanda Moyer, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic. I think she's coming around.
Yeah, she's sweet.
I think she's starting. I think she openly disliked me at first, but I think now.
No, that's Rachel McGrath. She just openly dislikes you.
She openly dislikes me now.
It's true.
She's going to come on and blather.
Blathering. That was real smooth.
I never did it, but I felt so bad about referring to Rachel McGrath. This is last Thursday, I think, about the iPhone to Friday. And I was so sick of hearing about the iPhone that Rachel McGrath is sitting there on hold. And I'm like, and we're talking to, what's his name, that Shane guy. who was here. He was on leave from Germany. And I was so sick of hearing about the iPhone. Rachel McGrath is sitting there on hold, and I'm like, so in a while, Rachel McGrath's going to come on and blather about the iPhone. And then she come on, hello, Rick, I'm here to blather. I felt so bad that I was going to send her like a big apology, like, I am sorry, I did not mean it, and I never did it. All right, well, so we got Lisa Goddard coming up here in a few, top of the hour. We'll have Tim Riley, the AM 970 Ministry of Truth, the new news hour. In less than an hour. And then Steve Kastenbaum about the hot dog eating contest. We have Jim Rube coming up. I don't know if I have time to read this right now, because I got these emails to get to as well, and then we got Lisa coming up here in just a few.
I say read that because I heard you laughing during the break, and I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, man. So I'm looking at this.
Bad?
It's on the front of...
Damn it.
Oh, and that's Lisa Goddard. You know what it is? I made her call by picking up this other thing that I was going to try to do. Well, I'll get to it in a few. And then I got this great Elton John article.
Yeah, I heard he had a diva freak out yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I'm sure.
Right after we were talking about it. That's so weird.
Talking about what a dick he is. Yeah, he really is just like... I mean, God love him. He's Elton John, and I'm not. But you were totally right when you were saying that it's like you... I think it was you who said that you love Elton John's music, as do all right-thinking people, but that you just try to avoid reading or seeing anything about him as a person because he's just such a bastard.
Exactly like Bob Dylan. Like, totally. I love Bob Dylan's music. I started reading his autobiography, and I really was not into him as soon as I started reading. Like, I don't want to know anything about him. Yeah.
No, he's just because Bob Dylan, and again, I respect Bob Dylan as a musical force, but goddamn, he's just an SOB.
Oh, totally.
Just a son of a bitch. And so, and with is that way with almost anybody. And so Elton John is exactly the same way. Just a big, screaming, angry queen about everything. So, all right. Let's see. Well, let's do this one call, and then we'll get Lisa Goddard. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. How can I help you, sir or madam, as the case may be?
This is John. How you doing, Rick?
What's up, brother?
You remember a while back you guys took the test, what was that called? The station had you take it, and you were all comparing notes.
Oh, the diversity test?
Yeah.
The blue book test about how not to impugn various races or cultures or creeds?
Endless comics. That was really good. And what I was thinking is, you mentioned, or somebody mentioned, how most Americans, I think it was your correspondent mentioned, that most Americans couldn't pass that test.
Right.
And I've always thought that myself, because I've had friends that have gone through that. And I was just going to say, can you guys get a hold of one of those?
And the citizenship test? I don't imagine. Probably online.
Give it a try. I'd be curious to see how the average does on that.
What you're really asking is, can Scotty J. pass the American
I didn't want to say that.
Let's be honest. Unfortunately, Scotty J. isn't here today, so we'll be denied that pleasure. There's probably any number of questions under that I wouldn't know. I don't know if you have to ace it. I don't know. That's a good question, actually, about the citizenship test. Do you have to get 100%, or can you just, is it like a pass-fail, or like a, do they grade you or something? That's actually, I'll look into it.
The next thing is, I guess it would be, you know, when you see these guys stand up there screaming about how this is America, you know, and this is for Americans, it's like, yeah. Can any of you sit down and pass this test?
That's a good idea, actually.
America.
That's a great sort of Michael
America.
Moore.
You can't even say the word right. You know? Well, anyway, thanks a lot.
Thanks,
great
sir.
Show.
Thank you.
Was he really saying America?
America. Oh, do we have that Descendants song?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have? We should play that into the break
we
when we're done with
everything.
Lisa Goddard here.
We have the YouTube.
Let's, it can't be on the YouTube.
YouTube.
I've got it upstairs, but I don't think I have it down here.
Everything's on the internet these days. I'll find it.
On the interwebs. Why do we say the interwebs? I know why we say the internets, because that's George Bush. And I know why we say the series of tubes, because that's what's-his-name from Alaska. Why do we say the interwebs? Where does that come from? So Laura asked me
that. I don't
say
the interwebs. You said that.
Yeah, but a lot of people, the Fat Boy says it, Becca says it. A lot of the kids, Sarah, they say the interwebs. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. From the Hill. CNN radio correspondent to the stars, Lisa Goddard. Why, hello, Lisa.
Both of you.
Hi, happy Independence Day to you. How's the 4th going for you?
Happy Independence Day. You know, it's going all right. They were, went out, talked to the masses on the mall. There were folks in line for a concert involving Tony Danza 6 hours ahead of time.
That is America right there.
That is America.
That is what makes this country great. That, and you know the other thing? It's Tony Danza and Hickory Farms. That's the other thing that makes this country a country like no other.
And tying it all together, as I was interviewing some folks in line, Elton John actually came up because it turned out that somebody's friend thought the words to the song actually were "Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza."
People like that should be killed. People who think that should be taken out back.
Gay, but I always thought it was strange that he was so open about Tony Danza.
Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza. No, people who think that should be taken out back, and we should make sure that they don't have children of their own. All right, so the. Now I'm going to have Tiny Dancer in my head playing as Hold Me Closer, Tiny Dancer. You know, can I just tell you this one little tiny moment here?
Yes.
There is, people who listen to the show know, and I don't mean any disrespect to you, I'm not trying to knock you for telling the Tony Danza story.
No.
The one of the things we don't do on this show is to do, we don't do wacky segments about misunderstood song lyrics. Not because it's not funny, but just because I equate that with like the lowest form of like morning zoo type radio. But I will say this.
It was a great tie-in, though. I mean, you know.
Oh, no, it's great. That's what I'm saying. You did it really well. I will say this also. I saw John Fogerty live, and there's a famous misheard lyric in Bad Moon Rising. Blah, 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 there's a bad moon on the rise, and that supposedly it's a bathroom on the right. So I saw Fogerty one time singing Bad Moon Rising, and when he got to the line about there's a bad moon on the rise, he did actually grin really widely, and he said, there's a bathroom on the right. And then
that's great.
And then he gave the audience, like, the finger pistols. It's fantastic. All right. Tony Danza, that's wonderful. Yeah. We were just talking to Amanda Moyer about it. These people are they're getting sworn in, they're getting their citizenship at Disney World, which is perfect in a terrible way. I mean, it's just all that is great and wonderful about this country. And then they ought to be bussed to a McDonald's, and then they have to go watch the Transformers movie, and then they have to go get a drug habit of some kind. I mean, that's really what would make this the best day ever. So you're at the National Mall. Well, here's a dumb question. Why do they call it the National Mall? Does mall mean... Is mall a real world? What? I don't even know what the word mall means now that I think
about
it.
A mall is a word that refers to a space, usually a rectangular space, and was most often used for, you know, kind of outdoor, maybe a plaza type situation where there may have been buildings either surrounded by green space or a green space that was in the middle of several buildings. Like in Washington, the mall has the Capitol on one end, the Washington Monument on one end, and then the sides of the mall are lined by the Smithsonian Museum.
And so, all right, so you're there, and they're watching Tony Danza. What is he doing exactly?
Oh, yeah. You know, there was a dress rehearsal last night, and I actually went to the dress rehearsal, which is a lot more fun because it's just not, the crowds are not as crazy. Kids can hang out.
And then you and Tony can share a moment.
And Tony can share a moment. Yeah, and he is the host of the PBS A Capital Fourth, which I have to geek out here. The 4th of July is my favorite holiday. I love it. I am the dork that cries during the Star Spangled Banner, you know, the 1812 Overture. I am gonzo for it all. It's disgusting. And so I actually, it was a big tradition for me to come to this concert every year for years and years and years. I stopped going after September 11th because it honestly just became too much of a hassle with security.
Sure.
And my friends were past it. I'll admit that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. If I can inject just a slice of my own whatever. I am the same way. I am just dorky and mushy and overly emotional and just a big dork when it comes to the 4th of July and patriotism and all of that. And I have my special Abby Hoffman red, white, and blue Chuck Taylor high tops that I bust out of the closet. And I wear them exactly once a year. I wear them on the 4th of July. And all my friends, you know, make fun of me, and they all think it's silly. And I know my friends snicker at me behind my back, and they call me Captain America, and they think I'm a dork. But I'm with you.
I love it. I eat it up. You know, and we're sitting there. I brought food. Jason and I are sitting there. I made it a secret date. I didn't tell him where we were going, probably because he wouldn't have wanted to go. And we're sitting there and eating. Oh, he might have. And, you know, so we notice people around us are sitting. They don't have food. We start sharing our food. Everyone's sharing some stuff and laughing, playing cards. It's great. But Tony Danza, meanwhile, having a really rough... His jokes weren't going over so well. He was having a little rough time.
I mean, well, what do you expect? What does Tony Danza do? I don't mean at this event. I mean in general, in toto, as the lawyers say. And furthermore, you don't really think of PBS. I mean, the network of John Gielgud. You don't really think of the network of John Houseman, of Bob Ross, of Master. You don't really think of them going, look, who do we need to get to host the PBS gala? Let us get Tony Danza. I mean, it's how far down the list do you suppose they had to go?
You know, it used to be Barry Bostwick.
Barry Bostwick, really?
Barry Bostwick did it for a while, and he was pretty good. He was kind of great. Fit the mold.
Let me just say, Barry Bostwick, first of all, is in the new Nancy Drew film.
I didn't know that, really.
If you go to see the new live-action Nancy Dwyer film, which I did because I'm a dork.
Right. He's Julia Roberts' niece?
I don't know if it's Julie Roberts' niece or not, but Barry.
That's who it is, Nancy Drew.
Barry Bostwick is in it, and Bruce Willis is in it, of all people. But it's actually not a bad film. It's actually pretty great.
Hey!
But when Barry Bostwick appears on the screen, I just want to shout out, you know, even though I'm not really in this demographic, I just want to shout out Rocky Horror Picture Show quotes.
Exactly!
Because I'm a drama nerd.
Exactly. That's a pretty great thing about it. But, yeah, so Tony was struggling a little bit with the crowd. It was I don't know. You know, and the talent definitely goes up and down at this concert. There are some years that are phenomenal, like Pearl Bailey would come and sing at this.
Yeah.
It was incredible. Dolly Parton would come and the crowd would be so into it. You know, and then there's other years. This year feels like more of a in-between year. I think it's B.B. Newirth is pretty much the
really
the top
the headlining act?
I from what I saw last night, yeah.
Jesus God. Oh, that's just...
That's what I'd say.
That's really what the founders had in mind.
There's some bread with some chiropractor from San Diego, and he ate it up. He loved it. He was happy with everybody.
Well, okay.
So there you go. Yeah. The mall. It's the DC 4th is a fantastic way to go. But I was amazed that people were getting in line for this concert 6 hours.
You know,
hours ahead of time.
You know when they
thunderstorms.
When they were writing the preamble many years ago, that's exactly what all the founders of the country had in mind. And someday Tony Danza and B.B. Newirth will perform on this spot. Good God Almighty! Well, whatever.
You know, and even B.B. Newirth, like everything was falling flat. You know, right after she sang All That Jazz, you know, her big song.
Oh God, really?
Chicago. She sang it. She's great. She sang it, and right afterwards, she's like, you know, that's only the 1738th time I sang that song, and it was just dead silent. She's like,
wonderful.
No, really. You know, seriously, folks.
Whatever happened to the glory days of James Watt fighting with the Beach Boys over whether or not they'd be allowed to perform there? That was really the high watermark for me.
No kidding.
All right. Well.
No kidding. Yeah.
Could we be?
Not this year, but as people live down there having a good time, then tons of security, though. I mean, it really. Every year, and maybe it's my imagination, but I do think every year there are more barricades that go up. But they do have the system down. The first 2 years, it was really rough after September 11th.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I went to, it was 2 years after September 11th, I think, and it was in D.C., but I went to, I did actually. It was in 2003, I guess it must have been. My wife and I went on a big trip. We went through D.C., ended up in New York in Times Square for New Year's. And it was just that the security in Times Square was just unreal.
Oh, right.
I mean, it was just unreal. And we were staying at a hotel in the middle of Times Square, so we didn't even have to wait out with the commoners. We were able to sort of go down the last minute. But even then, it was crazy. But but we went through D.C. A couple years after that, and it was 2 years after 9/11 going through D.C., and it was still everywhere you went, barricades. It seemed like there were fences and police cars. I mean, way more so than it seemed like there were in the past. So, but I'm with you. I stood in line.
Incredible amounts of fencing.
I got up, at the crack of dawn, though, and I was because I wanted to get down there. I was the first person in line to get it, because there's that thing in D.C. where you can go through and you can see the... I guess it's one of a couple originals, but one of the original copies of the Bill of Rights.
Right.
And it's behind 9-foot glass, and it's suspended in a weird green gaseous substance.
Right, exactly. There. I think there's three documents in there that they do that with, exactly.
But I'm with you. I got up, I go gushy for all of that stuff.
That's what I would drag my friends. We would get up in the morning, go to the little Fairfax, Virginia parade and watch the guys in the fez, and then we would run to the metro and then get in town. And, of course, that was before cell phones, and everybody knows what I'm talking about. What a nightmare it was meeting up with anyone at any large event before cell phones, because we had to do this.
Oh, I know.
We'll meet you at the Air and Space Museum at 1, 3, and 5, but then, of course, people would be late, so you're waiting around. But we were in.
I know you probably got a jet here, so I'll hit a couple things real quickly. Let's see. So do you know, has there been, have they issued a tornado watch for D.C.?
Oh, I haven't heard that. Let me check the wires right now.
Yeah, my friend Squid just wrote, he said he saw it on Fox News.
Apparently, one of your competitors is issuing some sort of news report about a tornado watch in D.C., so I don't know if that's true or not. All right, so there you go.
Look at that.
Real quickly, I know that they had this business of you seeing if anybody knew the words to the national anthem, but you know what? Having read this story out loud just now, I realize I don't care about it all that much. So,
okay, there you go. Okay. Americans don't know it. That's the basic gist.
What can you do? To me, the definitive hit, you know, once Roseanne Barr sang it, really, that was casted. That was stamped in gold right there. That's the definitive version. I don't ever need to hear it sung again.
As far as I go, it was fun trying to make people sing it.
Now, I just like the fact that it was based on a British beer hall anthem. That's the only thing. That's the thing that appeals to me about it. All right, enjoy your 4th of July, and know that no matter how dorky or silly your friends may think you are, that there's at least one kindred spirit who is unashamedly rolling around in patriotism like a dog on a fresh-cut lawn.
I love it. Great. Happy 4th of July, guys.
Thank you, Lisa. We'll talk to you soon. There you go. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, on the Hill. God bless her. Do we have to break? God damn, it's noon. Well, hell. All right, ladies and gentlemen, back after this to Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth of the AM 970 Noon News Hour. We are live. It is the 4th of July.
We flip the finger to the King of England. The soul are coming from the Indians. We all have a side and guns in our hands. Took it for our own. Build a nation dedicated to liberty, justice, and equality. It doesn't look that way to you. It doesn't look that way to me. Take it, joke, I know. Listen up, man. I'll tell you who I am. Just another stupid American. You don't want to listen. You don't want to understand. So pay the shepherd, drink, and go home. I come from the land of Ben.
Rick Emerson radio program. All right, here's some more quotes that happened during the break. Both from Sarah. Sarah, damn it, Scotty's not here to get me water. And also, I can't go another day without owning Independence Day. I don't understand why you don't already own it. It's apparently the best film you've ever seen.
My parents own it, and I watch it when I go to visit them.
That was closely followed by Tim revealing that he had to pawn his copy of Independence Day years ago on VHS.
Pardon me, sir.
How much will you give me for this VHS copy of Independence Day? How much?
It sounded like a good plan to me at the time. I didn't have that many options.
How much might I expect to receive for this used VHS copy of a Jeff Goldblum film? Fantastic. Why, hello, it's the 4th of July. We're live, ladies and gentlemen, of the Ministry of Truth. It's Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
And this week, Independence Day, with many folks in uniform. We're told by the government that almost 600 U.S. troops have re-enlisted today at Baghdad's Camp Victory to stay in Iraq even longer than they already were supposed to. So we don't know if that's true or not, but I'm just passing that along.
Probably not.
All right. Well, other news, an Oregon man who shot a snorkeler in the head after mistaking him for a large water-dwelling rodent has been sentenced to 30 months in prison.
Does that say, who does that speak more poorly of, do you suppose? The guy who did the shooting or the guy who looks like a rat?
Actually, the guy who did the shooting looks incredibly like a rat.
Wait, now I have to see.
I don't have it up now, but I'll find it for you.
Is he an unattractive man?
I would assume so, yes.
He's Lefty the Rat. All right. And nutria are those things that I always ask about that run down by Ozzy.
We did several nutria-themed shows way back when.
But that guy that threw his girlfriend to the nutria?
Uh-huh.
He's like, he was being attacked. They looked like huge rats or opossums, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
We had that guy that called up and he was besieged by nutria, so he threw his girlfriend into them to distract him, and then he ran away.
Ran for his life.
All right.
So that was that.
So the guy saw one in the water. He thought he saw one.
The guy was snorkeling. So the guy with the snorkel on apparently looked like a nutria swimming in the river. So this fellow, Roderick, went inside to get his rifle, returned outside, and fired at the target. He aimed, but he didn't look. He was extremely reckless, said the lawyers, but he got him. And, he admitted smoking marijuana about five hours before the incident.
Mary
also
Jane.
With methamphetamine possession and paraphernalia.
I
was
see.
Found in his house.
Well, I suspected as much, Tim. Usually it's the devil's weed that is responsible for these accidents.
Oh, here's his picture.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's exactly the kind that likes to fire guns randomly into the water, too. Yep. You know what he looks like? He looks like what's his name, Jasper, that old guy that's the friend of Grandpa Simpson on The Simpsons. The guy with the beard down to his, well, Abe, let's go to the store. That guy with the beard down to his belt, that's exactly who he looks like. Well done.
I wish Scotty was here for this story today.
How many times today, no offense to James, but how many times today, I wish Scotty was here today. Who knew that we would miss Scotty so much when he was gone? All right.
I wonder if he's sitting in there listening now.
He's out drunk somewhere, just on a... out drunk on a boat somewhere.
We'll be reading about him later on this afternoon.
Totally. He'll be in one of those PSAs where they'll interview one of his grieving family members.
Yeah. So the man who called 911 to report the crash of the California priest and his lady friend made a model call, say the police. It's the example of the kind of information you want people to provide you.
So that you can then ignore it for weeks on end.
Police said the owner of the phone provided by the caller, he's identified as Doug Selby, and it was a woman who denied knowing anyone by that name. This is very strange.
So but he called from a payphone.
Yeah, which is really strange. Part of the answer... So, according to this, this payphone was located at Hildegard's Country Inn on Highway 26 in Timber, which is 11 miles east of the accident location. And they have just found out that that payphone, the only one working, was removed 1 week ago.
How creepy. This is all very strange.
But this even gets worse. The operator of the jerky stand at that location told police the phone was used regularly to report emergencies, and now there's no payphone within 25 miles. Now, Oregon law, Scotty, I wish you were here for this.
Yeah, Scotty.
This part is for you. Oregon law does not require accident witnesses to stop and render assistance. Does not.
Are you required to report the accident?
Only to provide an accurate name and address.
Now, did he do that? Well, how would they know? Because somebody told me yesterday, well, you know, the guy gave a fake name. Well, how would they know he gave a fake name? Like, how would you even know that?
I don't know.
There's got somebody by that name in the world. How would you know it wasn't him? I could make up a name right now, and there's probably somebody with that name.
And apparently, the OSP says a critical detail provided by the 9/11 caller was not forwarded to the responding trooper. Well, this is like fourth and fifth hand information by the time
it
was
all
passed out.
This whole thing is so weird. Mm-hmm. So... how do we... I don't even know. I don't even know how to handle this. There's just too much here. So, the priest and his whatever, his female companion, go off the road. A guy sees it, drives to the nearest... 11 miles, because there's no cell service. Drives 11 miles to a payphone, which
next
apparently...
next to the jerky stand.
Next to the jerky stand out by the old Jenkins barn.
I've never seen a sign out there. Jerky ahead.
Well, it's just understood. It's assumed, Tim. Drives 11 miles to the nearest payphone, a payphone that is used constantly, apparently, to report accidents because there is no cell phone, reports this. They claim gives a false name. They then find the guy, but...
they call the number provided. A woman answers and says nobody by that name was there.
So, but when he called from the payphone, did he give a different number than the one of the payphone?
Well, what's different about this is when we play the recording, I didn't hear him offering a phone number.
This is all very... and now the payphone has been removed.
Mm-hmm.
The payphone isn't there anymore.
Well, you can still get jerky.
Well, that's the important thing. You just can't tell anybody about it. So, all right. Well, so there you go. So it's all very perplexing. And then the cops haven't found whoever this is, right?
No. So they're looking for this.
And they're probably not going to, because how, like...
He identified himself as Doug Selby.
All right. Well, but assuming that that's a fake name, it seems like...
why would he have a fake name?
I'm not saying it is a fake name. I'm not channeling Scotty. I'm just
under the influence of jerky.
I'm saying that if this news story is correct, and by news story I mean just some fabricated nonsense passed along yesterday by some guy, this guy is claiming, let's see, I don't even know where it is. Some guy sent me something, you know, you gave him a fake name, but it's like, I don't even know how you would know that, and B, assuming it's true, they'll never find the guy, ever. So,
all right,
well, whatever. So, in your face, Scotty.
So there.
The point is, you don't have to help anybody. That's what makes us America. Mm-hmm. We're not obliged to help anybody or to offer charity.
Freedom. That would be socialism.
That's just what Ivan wants you to do.
Let's see here. Oh, somebody hit the MAX train today. Somebody tried to race the MAX train and lost. You can't do that. They even tell you in the posters inside the train. It happened at Northeast 9th and Holiday. The driver was south on 9th Avenue when he ran into the side of the MAX train. Damage to the truck was substantial. Driver taking away his shoe. TriMet will be checking to make sure its signals are working properly. More than likely.
Well, that they were. It was just a numbskull, clearly.
A drunken driver crashed into a telephone pole early this morning in Beaverton.
A great day.
Southwest River Road, near the Twin Oaks Air Park, wherever that is. A lifeline brought the guy to Emmanuel. We don't know his name yet. Non-life-threatening injuries, so he hit a pole. Then some evil kids stole $3,000 worth of fireworks. This happened in Battleground. Police responded to a burglary in progress. The Vancouver canine unit came out, too, and found three suspects hiding in the area. So all those kids, 15 to 19 years old. The 19-year-old has a foreign name.
Where were they? Where were they? Happy 4th of July, everyone. Where were they stealing these from? From a home or from a business?
2108 West Main Street.
But, I mean, was it like some guy's house or was it a business, does it say?
It doesn't say.
So they were just stealing fireworks. Well, Battleground is right near the... what is that place out there, that place that sells fireworks near Battleground? I asked Tim, our resident Battleground expert.
I don't go that far. What would I be doing up there?
Wishing you were somewhere else.
Probably.
Being lost, wishing you were dead.
Exit to Portland.
I'm looking for the sign that says, here's where you can turn around. More teeth this way.
The way home.
I think there's an Indian place out there, though. There's between... like right around Battleground.
Like an Indian reservation?
Well, but I guess what I'm saying is there is a fireworks place out there, and I don't know if it's one of the places we advertise, because we advertise for a lot of fireworks places on this station.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, here's another thing. Well, I was gonna ask if Indian reservations, if they're allowed to, if they have the same advertising regulations, but I guess they must because we advertise for Indian run casinos. So I guess there can't be any restrictions on that, because it's. Because I was going to say, maybe we're not allowed to advertise Indian firework places because we're not allowed to advertise products that are illegal here in Portland. But I guess they're only illegal if you're a white man trying to sell them. But I guess the Indian reservations can sell that kind of stuff. So, well, whatever. Anyway, I think on the way to Battleground, though, there's like an Indian firework stand where you could just buy stuff that'll like take off your whole leg, which is great.
Yeah.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
What's up?
I had just kind of an observation. I bet the guy who called in the 911 call.
I can already sense this is going to be one of those things that we're going to be talking about like 5 years from now. Okay, go ahead.
Well, it would seem to me that if you knew that everybody is looking for these people in that car, and if you had called in the 911 call with that red car, wouldn't you call back and say, hey, they're over there?
I'm so confused.
Wouldn't you call back?
I suppose if you were one who paid attention to the news, so most people did not.
So you're saying if you're the guy who saw the accident, you call it in, and then you read in the news later, hey, police still can't find the whatever.
Right.
I suppose, except think about this. There are 9 billion red cars in the world.
Now, yeah, but how many go off and the people are still missing for a month?
Yeah, but I mean, but this guy has no way of knowing. Like, this guy clearly didn't know there was a priest in the car. He didn't know there was a man in the woman. He probably didn't even see who was driving the car. I'm just saying, like, I don't know that you would automatically make the association that police are looking for a missing priest and his girlfriend. Because I think
in a red car. In a red car.
Yeah.
Well, and then when they found the names down there at the Tillamook Cheese place, wouldn't you call back and say, hey?
I guess. I mean,
unless you got something to hide.
No.
I like how everything is just so... You know what I blame for this kind of call? CSI. I blame CSI for this kind of call. No offense. I just... All I'm saying is, like, I don't know. I think, like, you're given the... First of all, I don't read the news. I work at a news talk station. I don't follow the news at all.
Yeah, but Tim has been reporting on this for weeks.
Some people don't listen to me, believe it or not.
Apparently not. Apparently Rick doesn't listen to you.
Tim. All I'm saying is this. First of all, we don't even... Like, for all we know, the guy doesn't even live here. Guy might have been on his way to Florida.
He might be listening to a music station. How would he know what's going on in the world?
He might be...
Well, I don't know. It's been all over everything. I don't know. It'd be pretty hard to miss.
Not like that, but she's just, there's something fishy here. You've got that total of...
Yeah, something fishy. Yeah, something's really fishy.
I know that tone. You've got that Perry Mason tone in your voice. Well, there's more... You've got that Matlock tone. There's something here that don't meet the eye.
To XM Satellite Radio. How would you know what's happening locally?
And that is true.
That's true.
Maybe you're listening to, yes. There you go. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
If you make that choice not to listen to terrestrial radio, you're costing people's lives.
It really is. Why do you hate America? All right. Let's see. We should put up some propaganda posters like that. Where it's like one of those, when you drive alone, you drive with Hitler. One of those old cars.
When you drive alone, you drive with XM.
When you drive with XM, you drive with Bin Laden. We should totally start saying that.
Yeah.
I'm totally going to start saying that today.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone's going to be really happy with
XM.
That.
XM. Who cares what they think? But who's going to be angry at me? XM? Screw them. I don't care. When you drive with XM, you drive with Bin Laden. When you drive with satellite radio, you drive with Nazis. All right. Hello, sir. Hi.
Hello?
Hi. Or ma'am, as the case may be. Hello.
And actually, it's Kara, as the case may be.
Oh, I see. It said anonymous on the screen.
Yeah, well, I'm weird about that.
And yet, here you are saying your name. Well done.
You don't like speak with call screeners.
Way to preserve your cloak of mystery.
It's a holiday. What the hell? I'm being paid by the man to be at home.
Okay.
So there was a drunk driving accident in Beaverton early in the morning. Do we know where Scotty is?
No, we don't. No, we know that we haven't heard from him.
Okay, well, I heard that, and I just got all nervous, wondering what my friend was going to do for money.
Should we call him?
Listen, not actually concerned about Scotty or his family. Who's gonna pay the girl to bring drinks now? We'll try to track him down. We'll give him a call here in a few minutes.
Okay, that was it.
All right, happy 4th of July.
It.
Thank you, Anonymous, Kara. All right, fantastic. I'm sorry, I'm still laughing. When you drive with XM, you drive with Bin Laden. That's great.
I like that.
Please now, I'll say this again tomorrow when we get more people out there, but today, I'm saying this now. If you are a graphic artist of some kind, please to be creating. I'm going to start sticking that poster up all over Portland. I'm going to start putting that propaganda poster up everywhere. When you drive with satellite radio, you drive with Bin Laden. That's great. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Out of Springfield comes word, a 4-year-old boy was killed today after setting off fireworks in a closet. He called in with the fireworks were stored and set them on fire.
Okay, I know that. Really?
Yes, really.
Where? Springfield?
Springfield. The same Springfield, Oregon that wants to host the Simpsons.
Well, I think I don't really know that. I don't really know that they're advertising themselves as the type of people who deserve a film script. Maybe basic intelligence and safety ought to be first on your list. Not so much going to the movies. Maybe going to school ought to be a little higher on your list there. Or maybe the free clinic. All right. Here's a tip. Well, seriously, when you were 4, you knew not to set fire to explosives in a closet. I'm pretty sure that that's the case. I don't mean to impugn anybody, but seriously, come on. I mean, for the love of God, there's just certain things that you learn early on, and when you don't learn them, things kind of work out.
Well, and who has a 4-year-old and sticks their fireworks in within reaching distance of them?
Well, and apparently where the kid has access to a lighter or matches. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, honestly, come on. So
it's a poor combination.
I think, yes. A poor and apparently condomless condom combination. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Yes, we'll definitely see some tragic results from the use of fireworks today.
All fireworks are illegal in the city of Los Angeles. Every year we have very severe injuries, especially
to
our younger citizens. Last year a baby was critically burned in its stroller. Oh. A citizen also had his entire left hand blown off. And the year before a baby was blinded when a bottle rocket struck him in the eye.
What? Seriously, who has their baby lying around while they're it's not the fireworks' fault. This is the fault of stupid parents. Stupid, stupid, stupid. That's exactly this fault. I don't mean to sound unsympathetic. I am sympathetic to children who are born to idiot parents. That's what I'm sympathetic for. We feel bad for children who are born to morons who should have been sterilized. So, seriously, I mean, we're going to be shooting off illegal fireworks. Get the baby! It just doesn't make any sense. I don't understand how that follows in your head. So, all right. And I do love the phrase, a citizen had his whole hand blown off. That does make me happy. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, with all the loss of limbs, it's good to hear a story about some limbs being reattached. From Louisville comes word that doctors have reattached the right foot of that 13-year-old girl who had both her feet cut off on the that roller coaster ride at Six Flags, Kentucky Kingdom. So she's putting her best foot forward now, and apparently they weren't able to do it with the second one. But things are getting a little bit better, so now she has one foot. Well, with all this 4th of July talk, it's good to know there's something positive coming out of it. A new hot dog eating champion has been crowned in New York City.
All fireworks are illegal in the city of Los Angeles.
Stay in your homes. Citizens, be advised.
First place with 66 hot dogs and buns, Joey Chestnut!
Okay.
Joey Chestnut.
Joey Chestnut was already the champion.
No, it was the Japanese
guy. No, it's Kobayashi.
I thought...
He was a six-time champion.
Oh, now listen to me yesterday. Listen to me, comma. No, listen to me, dash. Yesterday, listen to me yesterday. Now, do it. Fall through a wormhole in the space-time continuum this instant.
What, did you have some huge revelation about Mr. Chestnut?
No. Okay, I thought that yesterday on this program, Steve Kastenbaum said that Joey Chestnut was the current champion and that Kobayashi was trying to regain his crown. I thought that was the deal.
No, I actually watched the hot dog thing last year, and he won.
Really? Kobayashi did? Okay, all right.
66 hot dogs and buns. And Chestnut had 60 hot dogs and buns.
Did Kobayashi take his own life afterward?
It doesn't say.
Did he feel he brought shame on his family?
His people.
He was wearing... These are ribbons of shame! Fun. Well, okay. So there you go. Well, seriously.
Fun.
That guy... things. Well, no, that guy has made so much money out of... I mean, really think about it. That guy has so much money and fame out of sitting on his ass and eating hot dogs.
You're going to feel bad because he totally is going to kill himself. I mean, that's his life. Like, he's the little, you know, Japanese the hot dog boy.
Is that like a golden boy?
I mean, Japanese hot dog
boy. The pokey little puppy.
Once you lose definition of who you are, I mean, where's there to go now?
Seriously. Well, I'm surprised there hasn't been a documentary about that guy. I'm surprised there hasn't been some sort of a, you know, whatever. All right. Well, in any event, so there you go. Try not to kill yourself, sir. I'm just saying, there's always next year.
There's always next year.
I'm sure your family will forgive you in time. I'm sure your family and your people will learn to accept
your
failure.
That's probably how he feeds his family.
I can't feed my family with a codpiece. All right.
Well, Al Gorson has been arrested in Orange County, California this morning on drug and traffic charges. Orange County Sheriff's spokesperson Jim Amorino says deputies spotted a blue Toyota Prius going more than 100 miles an hour, which is pretty good for a hybrid, on I-5 near Crown Valley at 2:15 this morning.
Deputies pulled over the vehicle and detected the odor of marijuana. The suspect's vehicle was searched and Vicodin, Valium, Xanax, Soma, marijuana, and Adderall were located inside the vehicle. The suspect was booked on various narcotic charges.
I'm surprised the guy could even drive. I mean, those are all big downers, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, all of those except for Adderall,
he's
I think.
He's fat and bloated.
Really, is
yeah.
he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought he was a slender youth.
No.
He's not like the hot Gore daughters. He's the unpleasant Pugsley-like Gore's son.
Exactly.
It's got to be no fun having Al Gore as a dad. Imagine how tedious Al Gore must be as your father.
Well, his bail is $20,000, and the parents are not returning phone calls to the media.
Yeah, really?
He is the youngest of Alan Tipper Gore's four children and their only son. He lives in Los Angeles and is an associate publisher of Good, a magazine about philanthropy aimed at young people.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, maybe he shares his drugs with people, so...
So at least he's driving a Prius. More than 400,000 Priuses have been sold in the United States.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, of all of these things, you know, Al Gore is probably glad about that.
He's
because,
proud of it.
I mean, Al, can imagine if he could, really, because you know, with the drugification of this world, that if he had been busted with all these drugs in an SUV, that would have been the focus of the story. And like every Ann Coulter horse-faced idiot out there would have been, and he was driving an SUV! So at least he was in a Prius. You know, Al Gore's people are breathing a sigh of relief about that.
And the New York Times says Prius sales are up for the first 6 months of this year, up 93.7% from last year to 94,000. Wow, that's a lot of Priuses.
Yeah, and I think they're allowed to use carpool lanes, too, which is kind of cool.
That is nice.
I've been tempted, but God, they're expensive. They're so unbelievably...
It doesn't say how much they cost.
Well, they're like 26 grand, aren't they? I say right after Tim says he has no idea how much they cost. I'm pretty sure they're like 25, 26 grand. Hmm. I mean, to get one that has...
But that's your typical car these days.
Tricked out like a regular car, I suppose. But I mean...
If you're buying a new car.
That's like 10 grand more than I paid for mine, though. I mean, I have a reasonably nice, you know, a reasonably nice economy-style car.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 17. So, I mean, it just seems... I don't understand why hybrids are more expensive. I really don't. I know that's a dumb question. I just don't understand why they're so much more expensive.
I think those batteries are more expensive.
Is that true?
Probably.
The battery can't be $10,000, though. Because that's how much more it is than, like, my car.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't seem... Unless that battery costs $10,000, which maybe it does, but that seems unlikely to me. Well, all right. You know, I don't really care. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, maybe you care that the 4th of July is the deadliest day of the year for vehicle crashes.
I do, Tim.
There's about a 40% spike in the number of roadway deaths as compared to an average day. AAA spokesman John Townsend says there's every reason to believe that the numbers are pretty accurate.
4th of July is the biggest travel day of the year, but it's also the deadliest, too, and the bloodiest.
Jesus Christ.
Do you remember this guy from last year?
No. Yeah. That's yeah. I brought him back.
Oh, I don't remember
God.
Him at all.
He's my favorite.
He's from last year's 4th of July. He only comes out on the 4th of July.
Seriously, I don't remember this guy's voice at all.
And then we actually looked at the picture of him, and he's like a distinguished-looking black gentleman.
Really? He has a creepy voice, sort of like the way that like what a futuristic computer would speak to you as you walk by a building of some kind.
John Townsend says it's going to be dangerous on the road everywhere today.
More motorists die on the 4th of July than any other day of the year.
Okay, you know what he sounds like? He sounds like one of those, okay, here's what
well,
he sounds like.
It's a good closing sentence for the show today.
Here's what...
Yeah. Take this thought.
More motorists die on the 4th of July than any other day of the year.
Let's put it at the top of the hour idea.
And may the good news be yours.
I live in Christmas Eve.
You know what he sounds like? He sounds like the Soul Man version of...
I barely knew her.
If you had like a computerized voice, and then you told it to be like a Soul Man, like a black sex man, listen to this.
All right, Tim, play it again.
Play it again. Think computerized black sex god.
More motorists die on the 4th of July than any other day of the year.
Doesn't he sound like a suave computer voice? Oh, baby, you...
yeah, oh, baby, you so fine. Would you like a glass of cranberry juice?
All right. Fantastic.
More motorists die on the 4th of July than any other day of the year.
That dress makes you look so foxy.
4th of July is the biggest travel day of the year, but it's also the deadliest, too, and the bloodiest.
That's so great.
Who throws in bloodiest?
That guy. What's his name? John Townsend?
Yes.
I got to look him up right
Spokesman
now.
Spokesman for the AAA.
Apparently, we did this whole thing last year, but I'm going to do it again.
We sure did.
I don't remember. I flush these shows out of my head as soon as they're done. I don't remember anything we do. That's why we can do entire segments about that Chillaxin' on the Max rap song, not realizing we did the whole thing like last year. Hold on. John Townsend. Is it Towns?
Wait, he looks different this year. He's white and has a beard.
Really? You look a little different this year, John. You're white. Well, there's many John. I'm going to Google Image Search. There's like 100 John
Townsend. But where's he from, Tim?
They're all white.
AAA of Maryland.
Maryland.
I just put in AAA. No, I got nothing. Let me try this.
All right, there he is.
Well, how are you getting? Where are you searching?
I Google Images.
Okay, I searched John Townsend AAA. I got nothing.
I hit John Townsend, Maryland, AAA, AAA.
Yeah, but how are you spelling Townsend?
How are you spelling AAA?
T-O-W-N-S-E-N-D.
Oh, I'm spelling it like Pete Townsend. Okay. They're still all white. What do you look, how are you spelling John?
J-O-H-N.
Me too. John, T-O-W-N-S-E-N-D, right?
S-E-N-D, yes.
Okay, would you please come here? Seriously, come look at this. Tell me, I'm searching John Townsend, AAA.
Black. All right, no, just don't.
Oh, I didn't search Maryland.
There he is.
Oh, is that him? Okay, there you go. Fantastic. He's different this year. He's white. Yeah, fantastic. All right.
Well, that was probably where customer supervisors.
John, we've been speaking to customers. Could you be a little more white this year? Thanks so much. Ask yourself, is this good for the company, John? All right. Fantastic. All right. Oh, we should take a break here because it's like 12:30. It's 503-733-2970 coming up. Steve Kastenbaum about this hot dog eating business. Later on, we have senior radio correspondent James Roop. Aaron Geek in the City Duran's going to be here, and more from Tim Riley around the corner. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show.
You want a shot, so I will take aim. Don't even ask me if I know your name.
Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Still to come, CNN Radio correspondent to the stars, Jim Roop, will be joining us. Also, Steve Kastenbaum about this Kobayashi, some sort of an upset in the world of hot dog eating.
What else?
Oh, Aaron Geek in the City, Duran is going to be here. Probably before he gets here, I should read this piece from the Oregonian at some point that Christy Turnquist wrote. It's on the front of today's living section. Grown men line up for Boyhood's Transformers on screen and... This is bad writing. Anyway, it's a whole article. And revel in youth. Really? Is the 37-year-old Scott Daly reveling in his youth? Uh-huh. Well, whatever. Anyway, so there's a... So there's a big article about this. We'll get to it here in a while. From Christy Turnquist, who actually is a pretty great writer. So there's a big piece about Aaron, and it's Aaron and Scott, or sort of Aaron Duran and Scott Daly are sort of the focal point of this article all about the Transformers. So boy, they just come off like they don't. I won't say they come off.
So when is Aaron coming in?
1 o'clock.
Well, if he's coming in at 1, why don't we just read it really quick, Lee?
Who wants to hear it?
Me.
Who wants to hear it that has their microphone on?
Me. I'm not used to having lights at work.
All right, this is from the front. It is sort of a strange day anyway. From the front of the living section today, Wednesday, July 4th, 2007. Transfixed by Christy Turnquist. Grown men line up for Boyhood's Transformers on screen and revel in youth. The line outside Lloyd Center Cinemas stretches the length of the multiplex and beyond, curving to the distant edge of the parking lot. Parents, kids, and 20 and 30-somethings have been collecting here since mid-afternoon, ensuring they get a seat for the 7 p.m. sneak preview of Transformers. Here's the thing. Maybe this only bugs me, but it irritates me when something that is commonly and colloquially known to all of us as the something is officially only referred to as something without the in front of it. It just bugs the hell out of me. Like, the most common example that I can think of is the Ramones. Everybody calls them the Ramones, yet it doesn't say the anywhere in any of their album art. It's just Ramones, which bugs the hell out of me. So this is apparently just called Transformers, not the Transformers. Everybody on Earth calls it the Transformers. Like, it's so hard to fit in another three letters. Anyway. Movie business insiders are betting that the new movie shapes up as the blockbuster of the summer. But for two Portland fans here tonight... It's not about opening weekend grosses or box office tracking reports, says the Oregonian. Aaron Duran, age 30, and Scott Daly, age 37, grew up loving the Transformers. They played with the toys, watched the cartoons, read the comics. But as they settle into their... Listen to what drooling fanboys they make Aaron and Scott out to be. But as they settle into the seats, they worry. Did Michael Bay, the director of this new live-action Transformers movie, turn the 20-year-old pop culture phenom into hackery? Bay is, after all, best known as the director of... Something. Wait, hold on.
Best known as...
Totally. As humongous overblown action spectacles such as Armageddon and Pearl Harbor. Blah, 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 blah. Like many other Portland-based pop culture savvy Gen Xers, Duran and Daly mixed fandom with a finely honed sense of irony. For these two, continues the Oregonian piece today, the idea of Bay putting his 20-ton thud on their fragile childhood memories. These articles make people like Aaron sound a little unstable.
I think she had a lot of space to fill.
I think that this article, no offense, this article goes on forever.
Yeah.
It's like half a page. I'm just reading the highlights here. They're fragile. Who has fragile childhood memories of the Transformers? Look, I love the Transformers, but Christ. It's not like I have to go to therapy if the movie's bad. Makes them nervous. Also, in their true Portland style, Duran and Daly have day jobs but pour their free time into a creative sideline venture, a podcast called FilmFeverRadio.com. Tonight, though, they're not just watching a movie for podcast purposes. Their 2007 summer movies have been disappointing. All their hopes are riding on the Transformers. That's right, she says. This time, it's personal. While the crowd fills the theater, Aaron Duran and Scott Daly compare Transformers trivia notes. Remember how Orson Welles provided the voice for Unicron in the 1986 animated feature The Transformers, the movie? Duran asks. Daly explains, Unicron's a planet that eats other planets. Duran and Daly laugh.
Heartily.
They chuckle with gusto. As the lights dim, someone in the nearby seat says, I hope this is loud, blah, 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 blah. On and on and on. Seriously, like a full another column here. Let's see. Blah, blah, blah. Similarly, Jonas Hinckley, age 32, has no illusions. Among my friends of a certain age who are male, we're excited, says the Portlander, who works for a captioning company. But we've joked about the fact that we're excited. Our wives start rolling their eyes a little bit. They don't understand the excitement of giant robots.
Oh. Does it really say
that? It really does. Oh, God. He's like every person who's ever helped me find a cable at Fry's Electronics. Sir, you want to go over to the Ethernet section? Let's see. Hinckley's friend, Michael Ring, is also mildly embarrassed about his eagerness to see the movie. But the Transformers cartoons were, he recalls, one of those landmark series that defined my youth. Ring now owns Bridge City Comics on Mississippi Avenue. Of course he does. Here I am, 32 years old, with a baby on the way, he says, and I still have those toys. And my daughter's not touching them. It's hard to believe that no one takes this demographic seriously. At Lloyd Cinemas, the Transformers screening goes over like gangbusters. Fans whoop and cheer. At the end, people leap to their feet and applaud. Aaron Duran and Scott Daly are over the moon with excitement. I felt like I was 13 again, says Scott Daly, grinning. Jesus. Duran and Daly hop in their cars and drive to the Old Town Building and Funky Loft Space. God, I hate that phrase. Funky Loft Space, where they record their podcast.
They have their own funky loft space.
Yeah, where's this funky loft space?
It's actually kind of cool. It's downtown. It's the Geek in the City World headquarters.
It's funky?
If by funky you mean covered in dust and spiders.
It's a little weird.
If you mean filled with mold and has no plumbing, I shouldn't mock. It's better than many apartments I've lived in, I'll say that. Let's see. Blah, blah, blah. Transformers. Listen to how Scott Daly just reflexively speaks in bad movie sound bites, even when he doesn't want to. Daly says, Transformers is the best fun you're going to have this summer at the movies. Seriously, you know, he's totally angling for some job as one of those guys from, like, MovieScope5.com that they put above the fold in those ads.
Does Scott Daly put reviews on Rotten Tomatoes?
Probably. Let's see. It's about 11 p.m., and Aaron and Scott wrap up the show and get ready to go home to their wives. You know they demanded she put that phrase in. You know that they insist, put it, we have wives! Women have sex with us!
I know, that's the second time they refer to their wives.
I've had sex! But they still got Transformers on the brain. I can't wait, says Daly.
Oh, poor Aaron, he just wrote, hey, if you're done mocking me, how do I get in? No one's at the front door.
I'm sorry, I thought you'd be home having sex with a woman. When you're not lovingly caressing like a pewter figure of like Megatron. It ends with Daly saying, I can't wait, Daly says, to see it again.
With a belly laugh.
With one of the many women who are my sexual partners. Fantastic. Genius. All right.
Wait, should I go let him in?
Is Aaron outside? I can't. Yeah. Well, James could do that. Isn't that what James... Well, James is the Scotty.
I found out last time that door wouldn't open.
Well, which is he, the front or the back?
The front.
The front, I think.
Hey, James, are you able to go let Aaron Duran in at the front door? If you could do that, that'd be zinky.
Zinky? Great.
Thanks. Thanks so much. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
We should just ask Aaron questions about nothing but his wife.
Seriously.
Well, a funeral is scheduled for Friday for a woman killed when fireworks exploded in her face.
Oh.
Daniel Bars is a 27-year-old mother of three who works at a car wash in Southgate, Minnesota. On her break, she decided to light a firework, but she was concerned when the device failed to explode, so she leaned forward.
Yeah. This really ought to be a Darwin watch. I mean, it really should.
But there's so many of them, really.
Well, but I mean, how often do we have to go 4th of July Darwin watch? Can we do that story again?
I have
again?
A feeling so bad.
Let's do it again.
I'm about to go down.
A funeral is scheduled Friday for the woman who was killed when illegal fireworks exploded in her face. Daniel Barris is a 27-year-old mother of three who works at the Town Auto Wash in Melvindale.
Melvindale. Especially if you consider that Melvin is sort of a term for a nerd or a loser. It's like Loserville. Melvindale.
Well, during some downtime at the car wash, where she is employed, she took time out to light some fireworks. She was concerned that one hadn't gone off. Hadn't gone off, so she leaned forward, and you know what happened after that.
Let me look right down into it and see what's gone wrong.
More motorists die on the 4th of July than any other day of the year.
Fantastic. Where is Melvindale?
I don't know. We'd have to look at
Stuponia?
Melvindale.
It's the gateway to Steubenville.
A suburb of Dullsville. Suburb of Schnooktown. All right, so there you go. So the moral is, if it doesn't go off, just get the hose and spray it into the gutter like everybody else, for the love of God. All right, is that the end of that?
There is no more.
You're all excited.
There is no more.
Well done. Another one bites the dust. And another one goes. And another one goes. Another one bites the dust. Here. And the man you knew as Malcolm X is no more. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, the president says that Veterans Day is, quote, a great day to be an American. How do you know that? He expressed his country's affection for the men in uniform.
Today's not Veterans Day.
I know. But it's Independence Day. But he doesn't know what he...
However difficult the fight in is Iraq, we must win it. We must succeed for our own sake. For the security
like his voice
of our
is cracking a little bit.
We must support our
really?
Troops. We must support the Iraqi government. And we must defeat Al-Qaeda in Iraq.
Sure.
Yeah, which, okay.
There'll be a time when our troops can't come home.
The time will come when Iraq has a stable, self-sustaining government that is an ally against these extremists and killers.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Whatever.
Time for democracy on the march.
Here's, it's another time, blah, blah, blah. Another exciting time for democracy on the march. Democracy on the March, 4th of July edition.
A Canadian has been shot in the back by an American. Canadian soldier Robert Costell was shot from behind in Afghanistan by American troops who opened machine gun fire on him and another friendly position during an insurgency attack. This is from newly released U.S. Army documents.
How is it that you confuse a Canadian with an Iraqi? I mean, Canadians, yeah. You know what I mean? Don't Canadians? I mean, and isn't
well,
this...
they look a lot like us.
Iraqis?
No, Canadians.
Okay. Isn't this like the 19th Canadian that we've killed?
Yeah.
I don't mean to make light, but didn't we bomb all those Canadians a couple years ago? Some speed freak American pilot was all methed out of his brain and dropped a bunch of bombs on Canadians?
Mm-hmm.
So apparently they're high on the list of people we have to get rid of.
So Private Costell and Vermont National Guard Sergeant Tom Stone were killed during a prolonged and fierce gun battle in southern Afghanistan in 2006. The private was part of a 38-member Canadian quick reaction force dispatched to assist a convoy under Taliban attack. During a larger battle that ensued, and as Taliban forces attacked a forward operating base, two soldiers lost their lives. In the weeks following the Canadian's death, Canadian U.S. forces would not rule out friendly fire as a possible cause. A month after the Afghanistan battle, both forces launched an inquiry into the incident. The newly released U.S. Army report given to the AP yesterday all but confirms that the private was shot and killed by his allies.
Well, there you go. So, American influence continues to spread happily across the globe. There is Democracy on the March, 4th of July edition, ladies and gentlemen. Rick, this email says, I've never laughed so hard at your show. I don't know if it's because you guys are funny or because I was up all night snorting Adderall. Signed, anonymously, Matt. Thanks so much.
Here's Tim Riley.
Well, let's also, his mucus is blue today, just so you know.
That is bad. Well, it's estimated the barbecue grills will cause 6,000 fires, 5 fatalities, 170 injuries, and $35 billion in property loss over this weekend. Lieutenant Raul Castillo of the fire department says, for charcoal, use only starter fluids designated for barbecue grills and never add fluid after the coals have been lit.
You know what they're talking about right there, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Gasoline.
Gasoline.
Yeah.
With gas grills, make sure that the hose connection is tight and check it for leaks. Lieutenant Castillo says apartment and townhome dwellers can't grill on their balconies.
You have to keep a distance. Many jurisdictions have different distances, but you're not supposed to grill in balconies.
Make sure the coals have cooled down before you throw them away.
Although sometimes the coals may appear to be cool, always soak them in water when we clean up our grills. They may reignite even days after the fire.
You know, what is the fun of lighting a barbecue if you can't add more lighter fluid after the fact by squirting it out of the can and watching the fire race back to you and trying to drop it before it blows
and burn
up?
Burn down your neighbor's home.
Seriously, where's...
While they're away and come back, it's just a smoldering pack of cinders.
Where's the fun? You know, the one thing I'm really glad of on the 4th of July is that Max isn't freaked out by fireworks, because a lot of dogs are.
A lot of dogs get tranquilizers over the holiday from the vet.
Now, do your dogs weird out? Does Muppet get freaked out?
No, he didn't. He doesn't like noise in general, so it's just the same.
See, Max still fits like he's nonplussed. I don't know if, like, his previous owner is just engaged in gunplay all the time around the house. I mean, it's not, like, out of the question. But, like, we had a bunch of miscreants next door lighting off clearly illegal fireworks, speaking of houses being burned down. All, like, last night, just the little hoodlums who lived next door to me were in the parking lot. I mean, really, it was like one step away from just throwing pieces of dynamite into the street, I think. I would hear like this, get away! You know, and like the ground would shake. And Max is just sleeping through it peacefully while I'm laying on the sofa. So, doesn't bother him, no, never mind. All right.
Well, traditionally, Americans throw hamburgers, hot dogs, and steaks on the barbecue for the 4th of July holiday. But the chef Michael LeDuc says, why not try fish this time around? It's good for you.
Fish like mahi, salmon is a great grilling fish. Tuna is a great grilling fish. And all the fish that's kind of hardy, they'll stand up to the grill. Obviously, shrimp are phenomenal on the grill. You know, if you can get some shrimp, you can sometimes buy them in the market already skewered or buy some wooden skewers.
How does one know when fish is done cooking?
Touch it, and as it becomes less spongy, the firmer it gets, the more it's going to cook, and you can eat fish. You know, you don't have to cook it so long that it's, you know, firm and starting to flake apart. If you start to see some of the liquids coming out or juices, or sometimes you'll see a white material coming out on top of fish, that means you're starting to get it overcooked.
You know, look, Tim, I can see Tim becoming ill. Can I say this? I am a carnivore. I'm an omnivore. I am a meat eater. But I will be honest. A lot of times, it's not like I don't eat meat. Because I do, but I do, I will say this, sometimes there's a lot of discussion about cooking or eating of meat, and it really does seem revolting. You know what I mean? It's like, when you see a bad porn film. Like, a bad porn film just makes sex seem so unappealing. Like, you look at a bad porn, like some porn film from the 70s, I'm thinking, like any of Linda Lovelace's work. You look at a bad porn film, and it makes sex just seem like some horrible, revolting activity you wouldn't even want to do. That's what a lot of these things about grilling meat, it's like, I was watching some, one of the is that we were going to see Nancy Drew, and there was some ad during the 20 or whatever. They don't call it the 20 though anymore because they know we hate that. It's like some whatever, but it was like it was one of those like beef. It's what's for dinner. One of those ads that like Sam Elliott voiced it. Beef. It's what real men are eating tonight. And there was just a bunch of close-ups of like a knife cutting a steak, and it just looked revolting. I mean, it really does. And I'm a big fan of steak. I really am. But goddamn, it just looks disgusting sometimes. I'm one of those guys, I can't get, and I have to cook it, I have to have it medium well. I can't have any of the,
the redness or the blood or the whatnot. It's just I can't get with that. So, all right. We'll talk. Speaking of cooking, we'll talk about Sarah's deep frying adventures. You know what? Wait, no.
I need some suggestions.
Hold on.
There's a contest.
But let me just say this, just so I can see the reaction on Tim's face. Do you know what Sarah? And it's the B word I'm thinking about here.
Yeah.
Do you know what Sarah is going to be making in a barbecue tonight, Tim? Please be telling Tim what you're going to be making.
I'm going to deep fry bologna. Mm. And hot dogs and cheese sticks.
Are they going to be wrapped around Oreo cookies?
Wrapped around Mars bar?
No, we have my friends Amber and Andy are having this party, and you have to bring in the most creative things to deep fry. They're going to have like three or four deep fryers.
So is it? But what do you win?
I don't know.
Just the respect of
but
your peers.
But they're one of those like creative couples that I'm sure you win something really cool.
All right. So it's a contest to deep fry the most creative thing.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that next hour when Aaron Duran. So let's do one more, and then I'll play us in the break here after we do one more.
So there's a huge discussion going on about what are the best potato chips of the 4th of July and winning hands down.
Wait. Hold on. Where is this discussion happening? Nationwide?
Nationwide.
Okay. Best potato chips for the 4th of July. Are we talking brand or are we talking flavor or style?
Brand.
Brand? Tim's.
I was going to say Tim's, too.
It's all about Tim's.
Nope. Kettle brand lightly salted chips from Salem, Oregon.
Oh, kettle chips are ass.
An assorted chip that looks darker than most but delivers more potato aroma and taste. Pleasingly light, crisp texture.
Wait, do they advertise with us? Has anybody ever heard a kettle chip ad on the station? I say
I don't think chips advertise.
Well, that's not true.
On radio.
Well, maybe not. It's all about Tim's chips. Kettle chips are okay.
I like Tim's chips.
I mean, yeah, in a pinch, I'll take a kettle chip now and again. They got those yogurt chips that are actually not so bad. But it's all about Tim's chips and that jalapeno.
I don't like the brown packaging. That turns me off about potato chips.
The packaging, well, and kettle chips look... Remember when you were a kid? I think they've largely eliminated this problem. When you were a kid, you get those chips that were like green. You'd be like a normal-looking potato chip, and like it'd be a big green circle on it or something, or like a weird brown. Kettle chips all look like they've been overcooked, and the overly brown look of kettle chips makes them look like they've got too much fat in them. They just look like they're not going to taste very good. For me now, it is all about the Tim's jalapeno chip.
They have them in the machine out here.
Really? Tim's jalapeno?
Yes, they do.
Oh, I love those. I mean, they're fantastic. Tim's sour cream and onion are really good, too.
And number two, which I haven't seen around here recently, Cape Cod old-fashioned kettle-cooked potato chips from Hyannis, Massachusetts. Yeah. They're the best.
As long as
Christopher McCowney probably had them.
Maybe. It's like, that's like right up there with like those salt and vinegar or like Hawaiian chips. That's another thing I can't get with. I can't get with any of those. It's like pineapple on a pizza. I'm not with that. All right. Let's see. What is this? That's a fair question, Norm. Let's find out. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show, Norm.
Outstanding. First time caller, last time listener. And hey, by the way, next time somebody says that, you should just totally hang up on them. I hate that term.
What?
The first time caller, last time. Never mind. Anyway, who's
would you like to start this call? Would you like to start the call over again, sir?
Yes, I would.
All right, hold on. No, you just stay right there. Okay, get your thoughts together.
Is he trying to say long time listener?
I really don't know.
Trying to be mean?
Not sure that Norm has sussed this all out in his head. I don't know that Norm adequately planned out the call beforehand. All right. Hi,
well, I
Norm. You're
did,
on the record.
I'm drunk. So, what are you going to do? Anyway, who the hell barbecues fish for the 4th of July?
I think they're trying to start a new American trend, sir.
I don't think it's going to work.
thanks for your reasoned assessment of the situation.
That's just disgusting.
Maybe the fish think you're disgusting, Norm.
Rick?
Are you
being a douche?
Are you really a first-time caller?
Yes. I've never gotten through before. I am a long-time listener. I've been listening to you for about 5 years.
God bless you, sir. What are you drunk on today?
I'm drinking natural ice. That'll kick you in the junk, let me tell you.
That should be their slogan. Okay. All right. Bye now.
Okay. Am I fading out? Come on, do it. Do it.
I don't have the thing handy. Hold on a second. All right.
Come on.
All right. Bye now.
Come on, Jim.
Come on, Norm.
Quit dropping the ball. Yeah.
All right. Take a break. We'll come back. Steve Kastenbaum around the corner. We're going to talk. Jim Roper on the corner, then Steve Kastenbaum. Back after this, Aaron Geek in the City, Duran joining us, more from Tim Riley, etc. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere. Don't I don't mean to bust on your style session.
It's fine.
Just trying to do a radio program. Says, does my hair look dirty? It does look a little grubby.
I know. I wish that I would have washed it this morning, and I didn't.
Grubby's not the word. It looks a little greasy. When's the last time you washed your hair?
I think yesterday.
Do you remember?
No.
Well done.
But I ride my bike all the time, unlike some people, so I get a little
sweaty. Shut up! Shut your mouth! I have no excuse except that I could have, like, just at a leisurely pace today, I could have ridden my bike, and if I had woken up sometime before 10 o'clock. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show from FilmFeverRadio.com, where their entire manhood rests upon the Transformers movie, apparently, and where they have sex with women on a constant basis. Welcome, Aaron, a geek in the city.
Aaron's ready to
Durant.
Play hardball right now, too.
That's right, baby.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm fantastic. How you doing, man?
I'm okay. It's just funny. I mean, this article is... And I know it's not so much you guys as it is... And it's
she,
not even really Christy
Turnquist.
She went
Turnquist. Pretty over the top.
It's
no, funny.
I should say this. I love Christy Turnquist. She has written some great articles about me in the past. She's. Well, I really have... I have mad love for her.
She's written articles about you through me in the past. Just saying.
That is true.
Oh, Aaron.
No, that's true. You're my gateway to Christy Turnquist. So I'm not really knocking on her or you guys. It's just I know that that is like... That's just sort of the party line about the Transformers. That's the talking point that's gone out, you know?
Oh, yeah,
overgrown
no.
Overgrown adolescents, 35-year-olds who are pathetically clinging to their childhood. Whether or not that's even true, that's just how the media is painting it.
No, it really is. And if you listen to this week's episode, well, last week's episode of Film Fever Radio, we do kind of just mock that. Because when I first heard that Michael Bay was doing this movie, I thought, oh, crap, are you serious? They're destroying my memories. And then I stopped and I'm like, wait a minute,
I'm a moron.
I'm getting angry over toys.
Yeah,
it's one thing, if, you know, with it Star Wars, I guess, but I'm like, man, this is the Transformers. They need to just sit back and shut up and relax.
Hey, I'm just about to say, Scotty. So I'm not sure. I'm looking at the clock here, so I'm not sure if we're going to have if Roop is on time or not. So if we don't hear from Roop in a couple minutes, we'll probably want to track him down somewhere. So that's probably a thing you might either want to do or have James do, because I don't know that Scotty gave him that information. So all right, well, no, I'm exactly the same way though about the Transformers. I know that it's the big topic that everybody's discussing, because I got all of this. I'm saying on Friday I got all this personal investment in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, dude. I've already seen the first headline. Like, it's opening. It's one showing. All that, like that one showing that it did Tuesday night or whatever,
yeah.
Something like 12 million.
Yeah, I know, but to be fair, we're not counting the Monday night sneak preview grosses or whatever, because when did it officially open?
Midnight last night.
Right, the 3rd. So it opened midnight, like Tuesday into Wednesday.
So technically 12:01 a.m. Tuesday.
12:01 Tuesday, so Monday night.
Well, no, 12:01 a.m.
You know what I'm asking. You know what I'm dick. You know what I'm asking. So late Monday, early, you know, Monday,
yeah.
Monday night, Tuesday
yeah,
morning.
Yeah,
so, because we're
and
not...
That's its official date, the 3rd.
Okay.
Release
because
date. Yeah.
The deal is, I have this bet with Court and Fatboy about whether it's going to make 160 over 6 days, and we're not counting any of the Monday evening showings. Because
right.
It started playing Monday, like 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock
like,
yeah.
Bay kept pushing it up and pushing it up and pushing it up.
I like how you blame it on Bay.
Well, it's
Michael Bay sitting in his golden hovering throne. You know, that rotates in slow
Rick
motion.
Rick Emerson. Yeah, totally.
His hair flowing in the wind.
I know what to do. Floating up other, like, H.R. Haddon in contact.
Yeah.
Out of space. Hello, Jodie Foster.
Move Transformers to 8 p.m.
I'm on his enemies list. Emerson must crush. So
I was thinking, though, isn't it, I mean, apart from the humiliation, isn't it better if you lose this bet? Because then his audience will hear your show every week. I mean, it'd be like, you know, Court and Fatboy brought to you by the Rick Emerson Show.
No, because if I lose, it's Rick Emerson Show brought to you by Court and Fatboy.
Oh, well, never mind.
That's what I'm saying.
That's
bad. Because then I've lost, and I've got to be pimping their show to this audience. So,
oh.
Which is probably like, I mean, then it's a fait accompli anyway, because you know, they're probably already... There's a lot of crossover there anyway. It's just the depression aspect. That's all. That's
and you're not
all.
Allowed to back out of it, too. People already expect me to back out.
I'm not backing out. I'm
okay.
A man. I'll follow through on it. I'm just saying. And so, but I am holding true to my that I will not be giving money to Michael Bay. It is entirely possible. I'm not saying that I advocate this, but in some theoretical sense, it is possible that I will
Seamus.
Shut up. I will obtain knowledge of this film somehow. I will somehow be able to view this film without giving money to Michael Bay. That's all I'm saying. I don't advocate that behavior. But, all right. Oh, speaking of Seamus, by the way, and it looks like we... Can you give the number to James?
Mm-hmm.
It looks like we might want to call CNN, because Roop, it seems like he's going to be late, or he's whatever.
But, you know, I don't even know if anyone's still there anymore.
But we have Roop's number, don't we? I'm pretty sure we have Roop's direct number. Because Lisa and Amanda have both been there, so I suspect it may be just that Roop wasn't told, or that he's... Because we made that appointment. We booked Roop yesterday, so he may not even have that anymore, but I'm desperate to find out what patriotism means to Los Angelinos when they're not busy looting things and burning stuff down. And then later on we'll have Steve Kastenbaum, whose whole world was just it was revolving around this hot dog eating contest. So we'll get to that. All right, what the hell am I doing? Well, you know, I got to drink this cup of coffee before I do anything else, and then I got to do this. Speaking of Seamus, you made me you reminded me of this Seamus thing that I got in here. So let me just. It's 503-733-2... I feel like Bella Lugosi. Let's shoot this effort! It's 503-733-2970. By the way, I have to ask you this before we take Jim Roop.
Yes.
Is it or is it not true? And I'm not saying that it is. I'm just saying these are things that I've... Oh, I see you got a shiny new iPod there, by the
yes,
way.
Yes, I do. Brand new shiny one.
Did you lie through your teeth about how you destroyed the old one?
There may have been some fabrication as to the events.
Did
of
you tell them that you
the
were
downfall?
Camping and you let it be submerged in water?
Shh, shut up. Apple, Steve Jobs knows all. You be quiet.
He's up there in next to Michael Bay in the hovercraft.
Man, I don't want to take it Soprano style on the back of the head.
Because
once you're in Apple.
Let me ask you this. In the new Transformers film,
yeah.
Is there or is there not a Transformer who speaks in the cadence and patois that one might associate with a streetwise black man who then breakdances?
Of course there is. His name's Jazz. That's what he does.
Come on.
Oh,
he's
no.
He's done that since the 80s. That's what Jazz does.
Come on.
He says stuff like, ow, shuck it out. Until he...
Doesn't
I don't
he breakdance? Tell me he breakdances.
He breakdances all over Starscream's ass. Busts him up. Until... I don't want to give anything away.
Jazz did not breakdance in the original cartoon.
Yes, he did.
Did he?
I can tell
I don't
you
remember
footage of
that.
Him breakdancing the blaster.
I don't remember Jazz breakdancing in the original cartoon.
Of course he did.
Maybe I've just blotted it out of my memory.
Yeah.
I'm saying all of this having not seen the film, but it does seem like what
it's
I
not,
hear...
He doesn't full-on breakdance. He just has... When he walks, he, you know, sways.
Is there not a joke in the movie where the Transformers pull down a character's pants and laugh at him walking around in his boxer shorts?
I don't remember that part.
Okay, I'm just saying. These are things that started
there
to trickle in.
There are some wee moments, though.
I... Really?
Yeah.
I hear that it's like a nonstop joke fest. That's what I hear. And that's my big warning sign about the Transformers.
No, not really. I mean, yeah, there's some cheesy jokes, but they're instantly forgettable because they get right to blowing crap up. Yeah. So, I mean, you know.
All right, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from Los Angeles. CNN radio correspondent and golden god, James Roop. Hello, sir.
Yeah, howdy.
How are you doing, brother? How's things?
Hey, everything's great. I talked to the guy who does the voice for Jazz, and
yeah.
I got his name, but it's, remember the show Family Matters?
Yes, I do.
The whole Urkel thing?
Yeah.
The son in that family.
Sarah? Help? Anybody?
I'm sorry, what?
Family Matters?
Family Matters, the son.
But not Urkel.
Not Urkel.
Oh,
no.
He was the dumb
Eddie?
Kid.
Eddie?
Yeah.
Is that his name?
That sounds right.
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, he's the voice of Jazz.
Of the breakdancing.
Oh, that guy was annoying.
The breakdancing Transformer. I don't even remember if he's an Autobot or a Decepticon.
He's a car.
He's one of the good guys, whatever that means.
I'm sorry, because the Decepticons are all military vehicles.
Well, if it's
right?
Old school, then if he's a car, he's a freaking Autobot.
Unless he's one of the...
Well, I'm getting...
One of the new... See, that's what I'm talking about.
Hey, it's a movie.
That's... See, there you go, Jim. That's what I'm... You have to... Here's a little backstory. Aaron Duran, who is sitting to my right here, is one of our... He's our geek correspondent. He and our another guy who reviews movies on this film, they were both profiled in this huge piece in today's Oregonian... About a grown man and their relationship to transforming robots vis-a-vis this film.
Oh, very nice.
So, there's a whole lot of weird tension in the room about the Transformers. Today.
Whatever gets your name in the paper, babe.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying, right there. Whatever gets your domain, your website name checked.
Whatever gets you the hits.
Hey, speaking of taking the hits, let's talk about your mayor. let's talk about, I don't know if you all heard Tom Likas yesterday. Likas was live. He wasn't on vacation, and I know he was glad about this. Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villarreal who apparently throughout his entire tenure as a family values mayor has been given the high hard one to some local newscaster, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, the big joke around here, he's declaring his independence from his wife.
Yes.
Now, this has been rumor and speculation for a long time. And for several months now, he's been seen, well, first of all, he and his wife stopped attending some public events. They used to be together all the time. And he did campaign on the family ticket, if you will. We stopped seeing her, noticed his wedding rings missing. His aides are telling us he lost a lot of weight, it doesn't fit anymore.
Yeah.
Then it comes out that we're about to, or there's a story about the break, about his breakup, his family trouble. So he announces, yes, my wife and I are divorcing. The next day, she actually files for divorce. A couple of days later, the story is going to break that he's having an affair, because we asked that question at the news conference that he declared they were divorcing. And
did somebody actually ask that? Are you putting it to this newscaster?
Yeah, there was no name, or we didn't know who it may have been, but there was rumors that he was having an affair with a staffer.
Uh-huh.
And no, there was no affair, not having an affair. Then a new story is going to break that they found out who this person is. It's a local newswoman here at Telemundo. So he decides before that happens to say, yeah, okay, you caught me. It's been happening about a year. You know, and you got to love the guy.
Well,
yeah, he's just an idiot.
You know,
simple, stupid politician.
And again, I don't pass moral. I am no prude. I pass no judgment on anybody in any sort of moral sense, unless you're some guy who runs on the family values platform.
Yeah, that's the big problem here. I mean, normally, I mean, look at Rudy Giuliani. I mean, you got Gavin Newsom. You got Bill Clinton. I mean, come on.
I don't care. Whatever. You know, what's the point of becoming a powerful politician if you can't have an affair with some hot, like, 19-year-old staff secretary?
And let's face it, man, politics takes a toll on a marriage. I mean, it really does.
Yeah.
Marriage takes a toll on marriage, but being in politics is even worse. So you have to kind of understand the dynamics there. The problem is, you're right, this guy's had problems in the past. He has two adult children from previous relationships. They have he and Karina have broken up before when he was Speaker of the House in this state, and they got back together, however. And so here he is again. Now he has two teenage kids with her. And there's rumor that this Mirthala Salinas is pregnant, but he's saying that's not true. But then we can't believe him anymore. We talked about his personal life.
Yes.
So we're saying, yeah, okay, when the belly pops, then you'll come back and tell us, yes, okay, she is pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those crazy things. And you're right. He campaigned on the family ticket. He talks about family values. He's Hispanic.
Well, and the
and
Latin community
huge in the Spanish culture.
Yeah, this is going to play poorly in the Latin community.
It really is. It already is, except for the fact that the more educated of the Latino population is saying, you know, it doesn't affect me what he does in his personal life, as long as he runs the city and keeps those promises.
Is he, because he has this weird Villarreosa, this weird name, because it's an amalgam of his name and his wife's name. Is he going to unhook that and go back to his real name?
Well, she is. Her mother was saying that she's so angry that she's thinking about taking her name back to Regosa, because he was Villa and she is Regosa, so you put them together and then you got the Villa Regosa.
The mother-in-law told the best story, which is because his whole thing was, you know, it's like, why aren't you wearing your wedding ring? I was at the gym, you know, or just some idiot guy response. Apparently, the mother-in-law tells this story, the wife's mom tells this story about how he comes home, his wife, the mayor's wife, says, why aren't you wearing your wedding ring? And according to the mother-in-law, his response was, none of your business.
That's exactly right. That's what she told us.
That's really smart. That's playing it cool is what that is.
Well, and I got to tell you, you know, when we were doing construction on my house several years ago, I lost my wedding ring in the fray of things. And for a couple of days, as I was trying to find it, people ask you, why aren't you wearing your wedding ring?
Right.
You don't think people notice that stuff.
Oh, no.
But I went, jeez, I got to go get a metal detector and find this thing to keep get people off my back.
Yeah, seriously. You know? Yeah, seriously, because otherwise it just... And every story you come up with, it sounds fake. So I was working on the car, and I just...
There's a pile of sawdust somewhere in the house. Yeah,
seriously.
Sure.
All right, and then what's the... it says here, on this 4th of July, CNN's Jim Roop discusses with Americans what patriotism means in today's times. What say ye, Jim Roop, about patriotism?
I was actually surprised at the answers I got.
You know, I thought it was going to be a real simple MOS type situation. What is patriotism? It means waving the flag and getting it out of the garage on the 4th of July or putting it on the door. It means going to the parade and seeing fireworks. I thought that's what it was going to be. But it was a whole lot of deep thoughts about community and taking care of each other and how patriotism comes in waves. Physical patriotism right after 9/11, but the consistent patriotism that we all have for each other and taking care of each other in this country is I mean, it was like, wow. And the younger kids, the younger people in their 20s and 30s are more cerebral about their patriotism, and the older folks, 50-plus, are more Norman Rockwell about it. You know,
right.
It was pretty interesting what I found. And the Vietnam veterans are a little jealous of the soldiers. Here we got soldiers now in a very unpopular war, yet the soldiers themselves are respected. The war is not, the soldiers are. And the Vietnam vets are saying, man, I wish we had that same kind of patriotism.
My wife works with veterans, and she hears that a lot, actually,
yeah.
From a guy who feel that they really got the shaft, compared to now where people make the delineation in their head between the war and the soldiers, and it wasn't that they all got sort of unfairly lumped together in the early 70s that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, but some of the Vietnam vets I talked to over the past couple of days also said, it is no longer uncool to be a Vietnam vet. So now they're getting their pats on the back and their thank yous and all of that they didn't get, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Right. Just one final observation. We're running behind time. It's one final observation. Sarah Dillon is going to a barbecue later. Celebrating our independence is all right-thinking Americans do by grilling huge hunks of meat.
Sure.
And so she's going to a barbecue, but here's the deal. It's a deep fry a cue or something?
It's a deep fryer. It's a deep fry-off.
It's a deep fry-off, but the deal is it's a contest to deep fry the best or the most interesting thing. And so we are taking suggestions for what Sarah Dillon ought to be deep frying at this event later on in the day. Have ye a suggestion, Jim Roop?
I could get real crude, obviously. But
how could you get real crude?
It has to be edible, correct?
She's not going to deep fry her underwear.
No, I wasn't thinking underwear. It has to be edible, right? Something someone has to eat?
Yeah.
I really don't know where we're going here. I feel like I'm in the dark on this. I feel like I'm feeling my way along.
Does it have to be meat?
No.
No.
I don't know.
Jim Roop, ladies and gentlemen, God bless him.
Out with the bang.
All right, that's going out strong. That's what that is. All right.
I'm just here to help, man.
Job accomplished. All right.
I'm consuming large amounts of alcohol.
Enjoy the rest of your day, my friend. We will talk to you, if not tomorrow, then in the very near future. Happy Independence Day, James.
Thank you very much.
There you go. Jim Roop, ladies and gentlemen. I'll play us in the break here. Jim Roop, ladies and gentlemen, live in Los Angeles. All right, it's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll come back. Tim Riley around the corner. More from Aaron Geek in the City Duran. Later on, Steve Kastenbaum for the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest and Behind the Christmas. It's the 4th of July. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show.
Alone with the morning burning red on the canvas in my ear. Ain't no picture of you and me driving across country. Just the road and its majesty. And I'm looking at you with
the love of God.
Go ahead, pilot. We're ready to take off right now. By the way, can we get a blanket for Patricia?
Sure, this is exciting to somebody.
Has anybody got any missiles?
I don't even know what that was.
It was Jeff Goldblum counting down
yeah. The
alien attack.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Checkmate.
You know, the really hard Independence Day
when they're staring at him through the window snarling.
I found him.
Yeah. All right.
I gotta call my lawyer. My lawyer.
No, it's his mother. I gotta call my mother.
He says both.
Oh, really? I'm sorry.
Let's all shrink first.
Yeah, I was
I'm
doing
not
this.
The Independence Day aficionado.
I wasn't doing the entire line. There's only so much fiery fire thing I can get in my mouth.
Uh-huh. 503-733-2970. So that's how it is.
I see. whatever.
Aaron was telling us a story during the break about the last time he drank Night Train.
It was many years ago.
He ended up in the bottom of a staircase, and he woke up with his pants off. So, you know, there you go. It's 503-733-2970. In less than an hour, we'll be talking to Steve Kassenbaum. From CNN. It makes me laugh now. Steve Kassenbaum about this hot dog eating contest. We're taking suggestions on what Sarah ought to be deep frying at a barbecue coming up today. Let's see. What do we have here? Rick, try a battered... Now, battered Snickers bar is very... That's very 1999. That's old school, sir. What else do we have here? Sarah ought to be deep... Oh, deep-frying bologna. He said bologna. Deep-frying bologna is more commonly known as Southeast Portland prime rib. best show ever, says Ron. Let's see. This is... hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello. You have a deep-frying suggestion, sir.
Yeah, a little recipe from Brazil. I know, Sarah, you like to go to Gen X Clothing on 82nd.
I do, and I'm not ashamed. It's the greatest store ever.
This is a recipe from where?
I'm just saying where this particular item is located. The Food for Less, right in the same parking lot. You know where that is.
I know where it is. Yeah, we've been to Food for Less when we had the White Trash Barbecue at the eating contest. That's where we got all of our weird
food. We got our mystery food.
Okay. Well, I know for a fact that they do sell something called yucca root. Also known as cassava, also known as aipim. When I was in Brazil, greatest thing ever, you take this root, you peel it, you chop it up into small sections, you boil it until thoroughly soft, and then you deep fry it. Serve it lightly salted. It's freaking delicious.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, it's kind of like a, the closest thing that I could... kind of like potato, but kind of not. And it's really easy to prepare. You'll definitely get points for serving something that nobody's ever heard of.
Why do they sell this at the Food for Less? This seems like a product that they would sell at some upscale place, like a Whole Foods.
Mm. Oh, you're saying Food for Less is an upscale?
No, I can tell you exactly why.
Maybe compared to the government cheese office.
Food for Less, this is not the same reason why for a lot of the stuff that I make my home cooking stuff, I go to Winco, because you get a lot of Mexican food supplies there.
Exactly. You have Mexican, South American, Central American. Really, it's like a staple throughout that whole entire part of the world.
All right.
So,
all right. Thank you for the suggestion,
sir. No problem.
Happy 4th of July to you.
Same place I get my lymph nodes.
Okay. Here's... Where do I
buy... I think everyone's drunk.
Sir, in what aisle is baby spine? All right, here's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
A man was robbed at knife point at a Wells Fargo ATM in Northeast this morning.
In your face, Scott Daly.
But the thing is, you really shouldn't be alone at an ATM at 4:52 taking out money.
What are you buying? What are you buying with that money at 4:50? Where was he at?
This is Northeast 122nd in Halsey.
Uh-huh.
Dodged a bullet on that one.
I was going to say, if you're really in Northeast Portland at 4:52, you're taking a lot of money out of an ATM. I think we know what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. Pop singer Avril Lavigne is being sued for allegedly copying her hit song, Girlfriend. She's being sued by U.S. songwriters who claim her smash hit Girlfriend sounds suspiciously like a track that they took up the charts in the 1970s.
Would this be Mickey's Tony Basil? Tony Basil's Mickey?
This is the Rubinew song, I Want to Be Your Boyfriend.
Oh, well.
No one remembers that.
No one remembers that. Well, no, now hold on. Now I've
Craig Adams might.
No.
he might be listening.
He can give you a sticker from the radio station.
What's the name of the band, Tim? How do you spell it?
The Rubinews.
Okay, hold on. I've got the song.
But
right
I do
here.
Remember one of their hits back then.
I've got the song. This is the Avril song. I love this song. I really do. Boy, and she just looks like it. Just a trash queen on the front of this record. I wonder if the whole album could possibly be this good.
It's not. I've listened to samples on iTunes.
Really? Is the rest of it crap?
Yeah.
Like a real strong single.
You've got to get the explicit version of this song.
Oh, no, that's what this is.
Oh, is it? Oh.
Okay, I found the other song.
Okay. Let's do the chorus one more time here, and then we'll let you play that one. Yeah. She's a dirty girl. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right, go ahead and going all the way to number one.
remember this.
I like it, though. Sounds kind of like
the... definitely Beach Boys-y kind of...
Totally. Sounds kind of like the Raspberries a little bit. I love this song.
The Ramones are my favorite band ever.
I love it already.
But their big hit was called Sugar Baby Love. I do remember that.
Yeah, ka-ching. I love this song. This is great. In your face, Avril Lavigne.
Oh, I hope she gets sued for millions.
Okay, can you pause that for just a second? And then, of course, we've got... it's also stolen from this, so she's actually stolen it at least twice now. Yeah. Yeah, someone's not going to be receiving any royalties on this, on her new hit single. I wonder, did she write the new single?
And it's going to be the only hit. It's going to be glorious.
Did she? I love how we love the new Avril Lavigne song, but at the same time, we're ecstatic that she's going to be ruined over it.
She's just such a bad person, you can tell.
Did she write the new single, or is it like The Matrix?
She probably claimed
it. Did they write it for her? Because, you know, that Matrix group was the one writing all her songs for a while. Here we go. How do I not know this song?
It wasn't their biggest hit.
This is everything I love in a song. What year is this from?
Maybe the 70s.
This is very... you know who else it sounds like? It sounds like the Knack. Totally has that Knack sound to it.
I have their greatest single here.
What is their greatest single?
This is Sugar Baby Love.
I think I found a new favorite group.
Don't make that face.
This came out during the summer.
That's like a Phil Spector kind of a thing here.
Yeah.
There's a little
wall
of sound.
Ooh, I do like this song.
It's swinging.
I love those background vocals there, that doo-wop thing. This is made for AM radio, too. You know, this sounds glorious on AM radio.
Sounds good on the radio. Here with the Rubettes and Sugar Baby Love. See, I hit it.
I am all over this.
Well, every summer there were songs like this. They came up in the 70s.
I'm going to go buy this today. If I can find this for sale, I'm going to go buy this today and listen to it all day long
can
at home.
Can you pick me up Independence Day if you're going to see the Game Exchange?
No. Yes.
And they're all dressed in white.
Really?
It says disco on their drum set. And a bunch of teeny boppers sitting there clapping their hands.
Oh, are they kneeling around the stage?
No, they're sitting on the stage.
Oh, that's so great. Boy, this totally is a Phil Spector sound.
With a lot of really unwritten fathers standing behind their daughters.
Totally. Well, April, it was a nice ride.
Hope you saved some money.
Hi, Eric, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, how you guys doing
What's
today?
Up, brother?
I was thinking Sarah should do something that's keeping him with the fourth, like deep fry a watermelon or something.
That might be good. Oh,
yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's going to be wonderful.
It could, like, explode, maybe. You know, high entertainment value.
That would be terrific.
It's not going to explode,
like,
but it is going to be disgusting.
Deep fry maybe some fruits, like a bunch of grapes or something.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Uh-huh. Yeah, deep fry a banana. Mm.
Or even marshmallows.
Somebody has suggested deep frying marshmallows, actually.
Yeah, bugger.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
No problem.
Bye now. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, Oakland's fireworks have been canceled, apparently. The city fathers and mothers feel there could be a proliferation of even more illegal activities besides watching fireworks.
Aren't there explosions every night in Oakland?
I was going to say,
night's the 4th of July in Oakland.
If you close your eyes or just don't look out a window, it'll still seem the same.
Twice if there's a Raiders game.
whoever came up with the idea originally, well, that was the wrong move.
Flickering flame of lights reflected on the clouds and lots of random explosions.
Everyone in Oakland is being asked to please go home.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
Well, as millions of Americans celebrate Independence Day, it's important to remember the sacrifices that have been made. Historian Bill Fetter says life wasn't easy for early Americans.
Of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, 17 of them lost their fortunes, 12 had their homes destroyed, 9 actually fought and died during the war.
Five became prisoners of war. One had two sons imprisoned on a British starving ship.
Nobody cares.
I was just going to say.
We're all very concerned.
I'm sure the hundreds of thousands of slaves at that time feel all kinds of sympathy for the white men that
struggled. For the dozen white men that wanted no taxes.
for the dozen white men that
didn't want to be taxed on tea.
Wanted no taxes, wanted to grow all kinds of marijuana and punish anybody who wasn't a Protestant. And have everybody else brought over here from Africa to do their work. I'm sure we're all filled with sympathy for these white men.
Yes.
Seriously, come on.
Well, what would the 4th of July be without Robin Williams? He is offering some advice on how to have a healthy and happy marriage. In the brand new comedy License to Wed, now in theaters. God. The comedic actor plays an eccentric reverend who refuses to bless the union of a newly engaged couple until they pass his foolproof marriage course. Affecting a priestly Irish brogue.
Oh, God, no!
Says the idea of
no!
a pre-marriage prep course
no!
isn't anything new.
It's been kind of an idea that the Catholic Church has been promoting for a long time, except they've had a recent problem with the Little League program. But you understand that the preparation is the idea of just the certain skills, certain
Why?
Abilities, certain tools in your toolbox, as it were. The ability to communicate, the ability to fight, the ability to talk honestly, the ability to deal with in-laws, which can be a gift.
He was funnier when he was on cocaine.
Why? Why is he talking like an Irishman?
Apparently, that's the way he speaks in this movie.
Oh, God. A whole movie of Robin Williams doing a fake-ass Irish accent.
He also has a fat boy sidekick in the movie.
Really?
Yeah, you see it in the trailers. Just a young little fat choir boy that follows him around.
Is one of you, are you or Scott going to see this movie?
Hell no.
Oh, because, I mean, why? What's the point?
We'll take some for the team sometime, but not this one. No.
Seriously.
Okay. Robin Williams said he had to hold back just a little bit while portraying the Reverend Frank in the motion picture.
Even though I've seen priests and reverends be very blue at an occasion, they can talk as blue as anybody if it serves a purpose. But at a certain point, he has a certain level of decorum. He has to kind of maintain, even though I can say, let's get the flock out of here, or what do you do besides her? You know, the idea of... He's got to acknowledge the fact that the idea of the old school, you're a virgin, you know, that they've lived together, they've had sex, they've done everything, and yet what are we offering them?
Oh, why can't you retire?
Apparently his sidekick is the fat kid from the Nancy Drew movie. How'd you like to be known as that? Hey, aren't you the fat kid from Nancy Drew? James just told me that. The fat kid in Nancy Drew is actually pretty funny. He is, as befits his nature as the fat sidekick. He's jolly and hilarious. He is pretty great, actually. The girl who plays Nancy Drew is really good, too. I didn't know she was Nancy Drew. I didn't know she was Julia Roberts' niece. She's actually pretty great. Hmm. Yeah, no, totally. He'll grow up to play the Chris Farley story. No, you're exactly right. That kid, the little fat kid from Nancy Drew, he will grow up to be like, you know, to do the docudrama about Chris Farley. You're totally correct about that. Rick. You must do bacon-wrapped apples. Mmm, that actually doesn't sound so bad. There's a restaurant in Hawthorne that does a flatbread, brie, bacon, and apple sandwich that is actually really... It's expensive, but it's really good. It's actually not bad at all. The deep-frying is sort of the... The deep-frying is the variable there, though. That's the X factor. Because you never know if deep-frying is going to make something good or terrible. Sir, you have a warning about deep-frying fruit.
Yeah, if she sticks something with a high water content, like grapes or watermelon in there,
yes.
Run for your life. I worked at a restaurant, and we when somebody wasn't paying attention, we'd throw an ice cube into the deep fryer if they were standing next to it, and then as they freaked out, we'd just about pee ourselves with glee watching them.
But, I mean, but what happens?
It's like an eruption. It almost explodes.
So maybe it's something you don't want to do.
Kind of like when people stick those frozen turkeys in their deep fryer at Thanksgiving, and then, you know, their house burns down because it foams up and blasts oil everywhere. Yeah.
So I don't understand this. So why does something with a lot of water explode?
Well, when you're standing next to, sometimes if you're frying bacon and you've already got a bunch of grease in the pan and you throw in another piece of bacon that has, like, moisture or wetness on it,
mm-hmm.
how it sizzles and everything.
Yeah.
Picture that, like, on a much larger scale, and that would be like breaded watermelon going into the deep fryer.
So Sarah should just have somebody else do the cooking.
Yes.
She should just hand them
this, like.
And then stand inside the house and look out the window.
Yeah, like that douche that called in about her drinking.
Excellent. Thank you.
Probably.
Bye now. Yeah. Thank you. Bye. Bye now. Appreciate it. All right. Here's
my first one.
Yeah.
Well, also in this motion picture, a License to Wed, are other actors such as Mandy Tyler Moore, who says this is a particularly busy time.
Mandy Tyler Moore?
It's a busy time in her life, I guess.
I think I related to the idea of she's quite ambitious, and she's definitely set her sights on having a career, and that's a very important part of her life. But I kind of think of my day-to-day life and things that sort of annoy me that I kind of suppress and keep in, and then eventually it...
Is this...
It comes out in a bigger way than it probably should.
Is this this is Mandy Moore?
Yes.
Okay. Boy, you know, she's carved out a real niche for herself, though, as like the good girl. She really has. I mean, I think Mandy Moore's going to have a long career. I really do. Everybody else is going to burn out and be gone. I think Mandy Moore's still going to be around doing movies in like 20 years.
Well, yeah, she can actually act. That's a good thing.
And she hasn't gone crazy. No. I mean, she hadn't done anything weird. You ever read the tabloids about her doing anything nutty? She was on Entourage, and she did a really canny thing by playing herself on Entourage. And they played her on Entourage as a very straightforward, very sort of pure kind of girl. So, yeah, I think she's going to be around. All right. Let's see. This is... What do we have? Oh, I'm sorry. This is... Oh, did you guys... Well, I'll do this here in a while, but did you guys get this thing from Seamus about... Apparently, the Olsen twins... Did you know that the Olsen twins have another sister?
No, he sent it to me. I haven't been able to look at it yet.
Okay, let me just... let me download it, and I'll play it for you here. Just a few. It's really disturbing. Let me just... I'll get this here. Here's Tim Riley.
Did you know that Mandy Moore was born in Nashua, New Hampshire in 1984?
Really?
I just found that.
You'd have a lot to talk about.
I think I left shortly after that. Anyway... well, we're done with the Robin Williams movie.
Oh, that's too bad.
Now we can move on with our lives. An empty gourmet dog food can be taken from Paris Hilton's trash and fetching $305 on eBay. The bid has reached $1.5 million for the party animal can, but some of the bids were retracted or canceled because they were not legitimate. The sellers from HollywoodStarTrash.com also listed several other Hilton items, including a used toothbrush that was sold for $305, two envelopes sent to her while she was in jail, sold for $510, and a Coke can for $51.
Yeah. All right. Hi, Bill. You have an answer on why fruit explodes in the deep fryer.
Well, anything with a high water content. First of all, hi, Rick. It's Bill, the science guy. How you
Hello,
doing?
Sir. Hi.
Good. Anything with a high water content, what happens is the oil is so hot when you deep fry it, that it actually converts the liquid to gas very quickly, and the gas expands and creates little mini explosions. And if it's really super hot oil, if you have a little pocket of liquid, it turns to gas instantaneously, and then creates a huge explosion.
This is, okay, I think they did this on Mythbusters. This is why if you've microwaved a cup of tea or coffee or water, you can't put an ice cube in it because it'll explode and scar you.
Yeah, the primary way that microwave heats anything is it basically boils the water and things. That's how you can thaw out a hamburger. It reaches, the microwaves basically penetrate the object, whether it's turkey or meat or liquid or whatever, and it boils the water from the inside out. That's
excellent.
how you can defrost anything.
Fantastic. All right. Now, okay, that makes a whole lot of sense now that I think about it. All right, excellent. Thank you, my friend.
All
right, there you go. Somebody has information on the Rubios, or Rubitos, or whatever they are. Hi, you have information about this Avril Lavigne ripoff band.
Yeah. They were when I was doing college radio in the 70s, they were a big fave band of ours.
They were a fave rave?
They got played a lot. They were in this, it was during that period of power pop,
yeah.
And of the antithesis of the punk coming out,
yeah.
And they were American version of it. They got, one song that I played on the college lot was... they did, like, the first power pop version of I Think We're Alone Now.
Oh, really?
The James one.
Interesting.
But the version that was ripped off, that song not only appeared, it appeared on the first and second album of theirs. And it went to number 4 in England, so... It's
always weird to interview a guy who's basically just some other variation on me or Aaron, just has access to, like, pointless information. So.
I was like, I remember the album cover. It's a sort of Rubenesque, like, painting of the four band members.
And it was on their first and second album.
Yeah, the song, it was on the first and second, and it got... Or, like, went to number 4 airplay song or something. It was some big hit in England.
That's a trend that you don't see much anymore, by the way. People repeatedly releasing the same song until it finally becomes a hit. Like the, what's it, the Modern English guys, that I Melt With You song.
Yeah.
Do you realize they put that out, like, 7 different times? And it's gone, it's charted, like, 6 of those times.
Right, and then they just put all 6 together and call it greatest hits.
That's what they do, man. So, all right, excellent. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, I'm going to play this creepy thing now. Rick, from Seamus. Or as Robin Williams would say, from Seamus. Apparently, the Olsen twins have a hot legal younger sister named Lizzie. There is a fan site, and now I'll post the link to this later, maybe. It's just so creepy. You'll have to just trust me when I describe it and tell you it's creepy. The person behind the Lizzie Olsen fan site has made a video that is just a collage of photos of Lizzie, many from when she was clearly underage. Now, they're all safe, or there's no, obviously, no nudity or anything, but it's just a whole bunch of, like, candid photos of the Olsen twins' younger sister, many from when she was obviously underage, set to a song. Who knows the name of the song it's set to?
I haven't the foggiest.
The song is called I Bruise Easily.
Oh.
Who wants to listen to the song?
I do.
And realize now that as this song is playing, it's just nothing but a collage of photos of this teen girl, Lizzie Olsen. Maybe. Apparently she's being bruised right now. My skin is like a map of where my heart has been. And I can hide the mark. But it's not a negative thing. So I lay down my guard, drop my defenses down by my clothes. And it's all just these photographs of Lizzie Olsen when she's like 12. It's so revolting. I'm learning to fall with no safety net to cushion the blow. I bruise easily, so be gentle when you handle me. So crazy.
The song is just creepy enough on its own.
Totally. And you know, there's a certain kind of guy that just sits at home and listens to the song over and over again while, like, putting himself into a ball gag and... This is like that old song by the Crystals, He Hit Me and It Felt Like a Kiss. Have you ever heard that song?
No.
That's from like the 60s. That was an old Phil Spector song, not surprisingly. Yeah, it was a song, He Hit Me and It Felt Like a Kiss, written by Carole King, of all people. She who did Tapestry later on. I'll find that. It's hard to find these days. I'm sure it's on the interwebs. Courtney Love used to sing it. Let's hear one more disturbing chorus, shall we? They have to know when they record songs with titles like I Bruise Easily that there's a certain unstable demographic out there that just gravitates right to this song. Oh, and then it says I Bruise Easily on the screen in big letters every now and again. This is the creepiest thing I've ever seen. This is way creepier than Britney Spears saying Hit Me Baby One More Time, which was weird enough.
Do we have to listen to this whole
There's
thing?
There's a photograph of her, like, 9. Oh, God. Okay, that's disgusting. Thanks, Seamus. Thanks so much. Well, let's do one more, and then we'll take a break. We'll come back. Coming up in this hour, more news from Tim Riley, Steve Kastenbaum, Aaron Geek in the City, Duran is here, and we'll do Behind the Christmas, an original Rick Emerson Show radio play, part of our annual Christmas in July celebration. Hi, you have an idea for deep frying, sir?
Why, yes, I do.
Can I help
you? Yes, that would be a deep-fried peanut butter jelly and bacon sandwich.
Now, are you just being kooky by suggesting the bacon, or are you serious about that?
I am quite serious. I have a friend of mine that she swears by peanut butter jelly and bacon sandwiches. It was one of her pregnant foods that she still dearly loves after three children.
That'll go over well with almost all of Sarah's friends right now.
Well, and there you go. Absolutely.
All of her nesting, bloating friends.
Just remember to cook the bacon first before you stick it in there.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
You betcha.
That sounds like an Elvis food. Sounds like something Elvis would have eaten.
Elvis ate deep fried peanut butter and banana sandwiches.
You know, we've got the Elvis cookbook and it's in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it sounds terrible, but it's not bad.
I mean, can't get with banana, but I do understand the appeal of deep fried peanut butter.
Well, that Voodoo Donut has that Memphis Mafia that's what it is.
Can I tell you? I wish that I liked donuts because I feel like as a Portlander, I feel like I'm missing out that I can't take advantage of Voodoo Donut. It's not them. I just don't like donuts, period.
That's fine. If you don't like donuts, if you're like a donut
I wish
guy,
I did.
I guess.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. It's like if you don't drink, I don't know. It's like not being able to appreciate Johnny Walker Blue, you know? Because I just, you know, I'm not in the demographic anyway.
I don't think
there's
a such thing as Johnny Walker
Blue.
There is.
Blue. There is
I think
Johnny
it's Red and Black.
No, there is Johnny Walker Red, there's Johnny Walker Black, and there is Johnny Walker Blue.
Well, that's on the high shelf.
But it's like aged like 190 years. It's like some unbelievably expensive.
So it's not
whatever.
Kept with the nitrate.
I think Scott, no. I think Scotty drinks Johnny Walker Blue now and again, and Leo McGarry, chief of staff on the West Wing. That's what knocked him off the wagon when he was a recovering alcoholic, and he was knocked off the wagon by a glass of Johnny Walker Blue, which a guy set down in front of him. So, and he has this whole monologue. Aaron Sorkin, of course, being just a fantastic writer, there's this whole monologue that Leo McGarry does, where he just talks like you watch it, and it makes you want to become an alcoholic because he has this whole great monologue. I should find it and play it and see how many of the audience I can take back from sobriety to alcoholism. Where he's talking about the way that a solid bottom whiskey glass feels in your hand, and like the sound that the ice cube makes when you drop it from your hand and it rattles in the bottom of the glass, and he's like. And then you pour the Johnny Walker Blue, which is 150-year-old scotch or whatever the hell it is. And he's, you know, I'll see if I can find it. We'll see if we can ruin someone's life today. All right, we'll take a break here. We'll come back. Steve Kastenbaum, Tim Riley, Aaron Geek in the City Duran, Behind the Christmas, all coming up. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere. Hi, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. We're joined today by Aaron Geek in the City of Duran. And in just a moment, we got to Steve Kastenbaum, who is live at the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest. We'll have more news from Tim Riley in just a moment. Aaron, what have ye to pimp today?
Scott and I are going to have the new show Friday. And also right now, if you go to filmcreator.com, we posted it early. We've got the Temple of Doom commentary.
Woo!
That's got Scott, myself, Jason Crump, Vanished Twin, our little PA Catherine, and Fatboy of the Court and Fatboy show.
Excellent. That's at the filmfeverradio.com.
And it's one of our more sober commentaries, which means it's, believe it or not, one of our more entertaining and informative. We make sense. You can understand us.
There aren't hideous racial slurs being screamed in the
yeah,
background.
Yeah, there's not drunken F-bombs about Short Round.
Fantastic. Let's welcome
There's a finger the moment, but...
Rick Emerson Show from New York City. CNN Radio correspondent, Steve Kastenbaum. Hello, sir.
Hey.
How are things? Okay, now you were gibbering with excitement yesterday. You were positively vibrating with excitement.
Oh, my God, it was great.
All right, so you were at the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Concert today. How went it, sir?
Unbelievable. We have a new American world champion, new record holder.
Now, I thought this Joey Chestnut guy was the current champion, but I guess not. I guess he was the challenger, but it was until today Kobayashi was the champion.
He was the champion of the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. However, a few weeks ago, this Joey Chestnut broke the record by eating 59 and a half hot dogs in 12 minutes. So it was this great, you know, challenge between these two worthy adversaries in front of thousands of people
at
the boardwalk in Coney Island.
It was the Godzilla versus Mothra of the hot dog eating contest.
That's exactly yes. what it was.
So Kobayashi has his mouth arthritis, though.
I think it was a ploy because he kept up with Joey Chestnut the whole time.
It was a scam of some kind. So you think he was sandbagged? He was rope-a-doping?
He might have been doing that. I mean, he swears he went for acupuncture this morning to loosen up his jaw. And for a while there, they were going hot dog for hot dog, punch for punch. but Joey Chestnut got off to a much quicker start, and that proved to be what made the win go to the Americans.
Are they allowed to eat the buns separately?
Yes, what they do is they'll down the hot dog, literally just take two bites and then just slide it down, and then they drench the hot dog in water so it slides down their throat, drench the bun in water so it slides down their throat. It's so beautifully disgusting.
That really, that can be applied to so many American things. And so are you, do you walk a little taller today? You talk a little louder. The air is a little sweeter today because the Americans have now said we have recaptured the hot dog eating contest crown.
We can walk again with our heads held high now that the mustard yellow belt is on America's shores.
This is just like Rocky IV, but with hot dogs.
I'm telling you, not since Ali Frazier has New York seen such a competition between two athletes.
Was Kobayashi bummed?
He was very complimentary of his opponent, yet he said he will be back next year, and he will win next year, he predicted.
Ah, fantastic. So what now for Joey Chestnut? Quo vadimus Joey Chestnut? Where does he go now?
Well, first of all, he'll probably have a lot of Alka-Seltzer. But he gets to tour the country, I believe, with this belt. And for the next couple of months, every contest he goes to, he'll be known as the champion, the record holder. 66 hot dogs in 12 minutes.
Is there a documentary or movie about these guys? Because there really ought to be.
You know, actually, there is. I did see a documentary on the Discovery Channel about the competitive eating contest now, that it's gotten so hyped and gotten so organized that there's this federation that oversees it called the International Federation of Competitive Eating, and they're sanctioned events.
Does it seem like probably at this very moment there's somebody developing a Will Ferrell comedy about this sport? I mean, it just seems inevitable, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah. He'll have to take his shirt off during the contest.
And it'll be called, you know, insert name here. The story of blah, 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 insert name here. You know, that'll
right.
be it. And it'll be a Will Ferrell thing. And it'll be a whole lot of, like, only one man can stand up to these, you know, Japanese blah, blah, blah. We, me, guy with wacky name. All right. Steve, final thoughts before we go. Best food to deep fry.
Oh.
Sarah is going to a deep fry barbecue today, and she's got to do something interesting.
Can you bread it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, shrimp, without a doubt.
Really? Okay.
I love my deep-fried shrimp, yeah.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, my friend. Enjoy your Independence Day. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve Kastenbaum. I'm giddy with excitement. You can tell he's just drained from the whole thing.
It would be called Hot Wieners, the Maxwell, the legend of Maxwell
Smith. Totally. That is exactly what it'll be. All right, ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
The coin tower has been sold. An L.A. group has bought it. Craigslist is leaving. So this is some California group that paid $108 million for it, but it does not include the top 11 stories, which are condos, and Coin TV, which is in the basement, which nobody wants anyway. So.
Thank you, Peter Carlin.
Totally. So it's been sold for $108 million.
All right, well, there you go. Maybe they can turn on the air conditioning now.
Oh, that'd be great.
Maybe keep that escalator running.
Jesus. Oh, yeah. I guess.
Oh, by the way, don't go upstairs here. The air conditioning is turned off. Up in my office.
I wouldn't be upstairs anyway.
I'm just saying, if you ever wanted to go up and hang up with the salespeople, don't do that today. Yeah.
And I always want to hang out with the salespeople.
Who doesn't? All right.
Well, speaking of music, we'll play a little bit of this. It was 35 summers ago that this was the number one song.
Bet you can't guess who this is.
From the summer of 1972, we're here with the Raspberries and Go All the Way.
Eric Carmen and the Raspberries. One of the forerunners of today's power pop. Without the Raspberries, there's no Big Star. No Cheap Trick.
He looks like a lady.
Eric Carmen?
Singing in this.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
What happened, Mr. Carmen? I heard you were becoming a lady.
Oh, that.
Mexico was a disaster. The doctor was a quack.
Sorry. The best part, if it wasn't for these fine men...
Sure. All right. I'm sorry. Sarah's yelling at us that we were behind schedule.
Well, if you want to play that, you've got to beat it up a little.
Well, I'm pretty much all done. I do want to remind everyone, on the news coming up later this afternoon, we'll have the most stirring speech for the 4th of July by any American politician ever.
In a little less than an hour.
You'll be able to hear more of Bill Pullman.
And every hour after that.
For the rest of the day, you'll be able to hear Bill Pullman. All right. So we're not going anywhere, but it is that time once again, 4th of July. It is time to roll the Rick Emerson Show original radio play, Behind the Christmas, starring our good friend Clyde Lewis, along with a whole bunch of people who've either quit or been fired since we did this.
Oh, so, don't work with us anymore.
Oh, yeah.
It was because we're fired that we don't work with them anymore. It isn't their fault.
No longer.
Starring people who've moved on to better paying jobs.
It's
or
true.
Kept their better paying jobs.
So we'll be checking in between segments here. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Behind the Christmas on Rick Emerson Show's Christmas in July. Am I potted up here? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Behind the Christmas. Thank you.
He was a young Norwegian carpenter with a penchant for making delightful toys. Little did he know that his trade would land him the career of a lifetime. But this story isn't all wrapped in fancy paper and bows.
I was 43 years old. I was only 4 feet 5 inches tall with a 68-inch waist. One day I stood in the mirror naked and I said, "God damn it, man, you're an elf! Now what are you going to do with your life?"
But after this rocky start, the king of all mistletoe found his niche, bringing holiday joy to millions. But his rocket sled ride to the top was not without its dark side.
As God is my witness, I thought plastic bags were toys.
And just when it seemed that this master of Mary had it all came crashing down.
Remember that device that came out? That thing? They called it the itch? Well, they should have called it sh-. I got 10,000 in a warehouse, and I can't even give them away.
His life spinning out of control, this merry old soul finally hit Jingle Bell rock bottom.
So the next thing you know, I'm in a Motel 6, in Dubuque. Some strange girl in the shower and a beard full of dried vomit.
But when it seemed that there was no way out, an old friend appeared from nowhere to rescue the prodigal Père Noël, former presidential hopeful Al Gore.
Now I know what it's like to be a washed-up loser. Someone who's irrelevant and completely without value to society. I know what it's like to have no one believe in you. So I figured, what the hell? I mean, I'm not doing anything, and I'm just growing this gut and this beard. Did you notice the beard? Tipper says it makes me look hard.
Revitalized and rejuvenated, this hirsute holiday handyman reclaimed his rightful place as the keeper of the Yuletide spirit and the man the whole world calls Father Christmas. Join us now as we explore the story of Santa Claus, Behind the Christmas. The story of Santa Claus begins here, in the tiny fishing town of Hundredlopen, just a wink of an eye and a twist of the head from Oslo, Norway. It was in this tiny hamlet that Gunther and Consuelo Nicholas made their home, and where, on the first day of the winter solstice, they welcomed a bouncing baby boy. Inexplicably naming him after the milkman, Consuelo christened the boy Scout, and set about providing all she could for him as he began his life.
We never had much money when I was young. I had no shoes, and I used to always complain until one day I passed a man with fake legs and real feet. And let me tell you, after that, I learned to count my blessings.
What the family did have was love.
They always made sure I had enough, even at Christmas time. I remember my father. One year he took odd jobs until he could scrape together the money for a Christmas tree. It was the best holiday meal we ever had.
Scout's father made his life at sea, fishing with the other local men. He expected his son to follow in his footsteps, but Scout saw his destiny when he was about 9 years old.
So one night, I was putting ketchup on my tree, and I realized how well the red and the green went together. Well, I grabbed my mother's silverware, and I decorated up that tree to look all shiny and, well, you know, festive. And so the next day, after I desplintered my pants, I got to thinking, what if we had trees? Not for eating, but for decoration. And that was the beginnings of my life as Santa Claus.
Needless to say, Scout's parents weren't wild about him using the family's meager food supplies for decoration. Some sacrifices had to be made.
Rusty was a real good dog. Put a little relish on him. Can we turn the cameras off? Please. Turn them off.
As time went on, Scout became more and more serious about his new hobby. Creating decorations for the holiday season began to look like his calling. What Scout loved most of all was the joy his decorations brought others.
I think the best thing I ever invented was flocking. I mean, I would flock the tree, flock the neighbor's tree, flock the neighbor. Hell, sometimes I'd flock the neighbor's dog. I mean, I was one mean flocker. And when the look on their face right after they got flocked, you know, that makes it all worthwhile.
His Christmas inventions quickly caught on, and young Scout's innovations were all the rage, though some were more successful than others.
I had this idea to decorate the tree with fire. Yeah. That one didn't really go so well.
The following year, Scout's asbestos tree resulted in several lawsuits and reams of bad publicity. It would not be the young inventor's last brush with the dark side of success.
I had this other idea to put faces, you know, faces on squash and other Gore-type products. Yeah, you never think to trademark those things.
One Scout Nicholas item in particular seemed to strike a chord with the buying public.
One night, I was packing up my hide a bed when the whole bottom gave out. Springs went everywhere, all over the room, down the staircase. Then I noticed that springs could walk downstairs, alone, or in pairs. And they made this slinkety sound. And I thought to myself, a spring! A spring!
It was a marvelous thing, and soon the whole world would know it as Slinky.
And from that incident came the biggest selling product I'd ever had. And that's when I realized there's a lot more to Christmas than stringing your tree with pork chops and putting funny faces on potatoes. There's all kinds of dolls and trains and toys of every kind, just waiting to be made.
Scout's follow-up toys, the Slinky Dog and Slinky Train, met with similar success, although one item, the Slinky Cane, met with disappointing sales. But Scout turned those holiday lemons into financial eggnog.
Well, the settlements for the Slinky Cane almost put me under, so I knew whatever I came up with next had to be good. So, if they don't want a cane made of flimsy metal, then what do they want? Well, what's something everybody likes? And I thought, candy.
Scout's moment of clarity reaped a financial windfall. The candy cane was an instant bestseller, showing Scout that there was an untapped market for his holiday gewgaws. It was time to take his dream to the world stage. Coming up, Scout finds success beyond his wildest dreams and temptations beyond his wildest imagination.
Oh, I don't know. I'd say about 4,600 women, sometimes two, maybe three at a time. A lot of the times they want me to stay in the suit. You know, for the whole thing. I've got the pictures in the book. You want to see them?
When Behind the Christmas continues.
Why, hello there. It's the Rick Emerson Show's annual Christmas in July show. You're listening to Behind the Christmas, an original Rick Emerson Show radio production.
After years of struggle and financial heartbreak, 43-year-old Scout Nicholas of Hundreglobe in Norway was finally tasting success. His breakthrough product, the candy cane, had opened the doors to a worldwide market of sugar plums and sleds. But despite a booming professional career, his private life remained a desolate igloo of solitude.
I had one of those DSL connections, and I used to go into the chat room. I'd call myself Ramrod 69, but as soon as they find out you're an elf, it's all over. I'd say I didn't have a real date in 5 years.
But all that changed one cold New Year's Eve. Drunk and alone, bathed in the warm glow of the television, Scout was startled by a knock at the door.
I was watching Dick Clark introduce Kenny Rogers, and kind of idly wondering if a 12-gauge would take off my whole head, when I heard a knock at the door. I was going to just ignore it, but whoever it was, wasn't taking no for an answer.
Opening the door that cold and snowy night, Scout was greeted by the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. A woman who herself was looking for something special.
The St. Andrew's Spaghetti Fee. And between the snow and those Jaeger shots at the frat house, I didn't know where I was.
Scout was smitten.
She had all her teeth and no visible scars or prosthetic limbs.
And when he opened the door, I thought it was Sebastian Cabot. I still didn't know where I was, so I just asked if it was St. Andrew's. And he said...
And I said, no, St. Andrew's gone, bowling. I'm St. Nicholas. And she bought it.
And that combination of hard liquor and blatant deception was the start of a lasting relationship. St. Nick had found his Mrs. Claus. After a whirlwind courtship, the couple tied the knot, honeymooning in Liechtenstein before making their home at Scout's new base of operations.
The North Pole thing was supposed to be a tax dodge. They told me if I put all my assets in the Arctic, the government couldn't touch it. Well, then my tax advisor got killed in a government standoff, so, that didn't work out too well. I mean, did you know that everyone has to pay taxes? Anyway, turns out I have to live there. So here I am. I knew I should have gone to H&R Block.
His factory now ensconced in the tree-tinsel tundra of the North Pole, Scout turned his attention to marketing. The first change he made was a long time coming.
I was trying out a whole bunch of names that I thought would sound better. I mean, Scout. Made me sound like one of those Indians on the side of the road, always trying to sell you turquoise jewelry and reeking of gin. I wanted something that had a ring to it.
But finding just the right name proved to be a challenge.
I thought maybe Nicholas the Great or Scouty the Elf, D.B. Cooper. I mean, the list goes on. St. Nicholas was okay, but it cuts out the whole Jewish market, you know? And that's a pile of pastrami you don't want to lose.
It was a drunken and babbling Mrs. Claus who provided the answer.
Well, the sign painters were there, and they were doing the front of the factory. And I'm afraid I don't hold my arbor mist very well.
So when they asked her what name went on the sign, instead of St. Nicholas, it just came out, Valifar. By the time I found out, it was too late to change the sign, so I was Santa Claus. Ho, ho, ho.
His new name in place, Santa began a full marketing assault on the Christmas world. His name and face appeared everywhere, from billboards to buses, and he became an icon to a world seeking holiday hope. Everyone, it seemed, wanted a piece of Santa, but keeping up with that demand proved a terrible strain.
I didn't know anything about physics or atmospheric re-entry burn. I mean, the first time out, we lost 7 of the 8 tiny reindeer. Why don't you try explaining to a 5-year-old at the mall why you reek of burnt reindeer hair?
The technical challenges were just one part of the burden. To make his overnight delivery deadline, Santa had little time to spare.
I mean, have you ever tried to visit 300,000 million homes in one night? The time zone changes alone put you over the edge.
Trying to meet the impossible deadline often took a physical toll, one that Santa Claus only now will talk about.
I've got piles. Yeah. They're bad. Boy. They itch. Well, you don't want to know about itching. And let me tell you something else. Bugs. In the teeth. Not so much in North America, but in South America. They got mosquitoes the size of canned hams.
His physical ailments shielded from the public, Santa's business continued to boom. But with every new hung stocking, nervous collapse came closer to knocking. Santa fought back the symptoms with a rainbow of highly addictive medications.
See these? Vicodin, 7.0s. Take a few of these and you can fly through glass. Don't even feel it. And these, Paxil, they balance me out. Take a few of these and when an elf comes to me with a problem, I say, hey, short round, don't sweat the small stuff.
But rectal swelling and psychotropic medication were only mile marker one on this toboggan ride to despair. Coming up.
I swear, I thought the gun was empty.
Santa's sleigh ride to hell continues. And later,
I mean, she didn't look 15, let me tell you.
When Behind the Christmas continues. Fantastic. It's our annual it's our annual Christmas in July celebration. It is Independence Day. The original Rick Emerson Show radio play Behind the Christmas continues after this. Stay right there. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program, our annual Christmas in July show. We now resume the original Rick Emerson Show radio play Behind the Christmas. Within a few years of launching his merry master plan on the world, Santa Claus had everything he'd ever dreamed. Money, fame, and the love of a beautiful woman. So great was his popularity that Coca-Cola signed him to a 5-year endorsement contract. But even this sweet deal had a bitter aftertaste for the Maven of Mistletoe.
Do you know that Coca-Cola doesn't have any cocaine in it? I mean, what am I drinking for? The taste? Boy, those guys could use a lesson in marketing. And did you know that if you put a nail in a glass of Coke, in 3 days, you'll be gone.
The sour feelings over his Coca-Cola contract were a dark sign of things to come. In the years following his dazzling debut, a host of competing holidays had sprung up to siphon off their share of the December dollar.
Kwanzaa. First thing I heard about it, the wife says, turn on the TV and I see Felicia Rashad selling Kwanzaa cakes. What the hell is a Kwanzaa cake? And do they have Kwanzaa carols? Look, if there are no carols, it's not a holiday. Plain and simple. And Hanukkah. 8 days of presents? How do you compete with that?
To counteract this new holiday heyday, Santa Claus and wife Magdalena unveiled what they thought would be their salvation.
So we thought, why not have a second Christmas in July? Call it Christmas 2! I still think it was a good idea.
So then, you start to hear the words sellout. And of course, the media was just as cruel. That wrinkled bastard, Paul Harvey, he's on the coal list for life, I'll tell you.
After suffering near-fatal heat stroke while delivering presents in a full Santa suit on the hottest day of the year, Christmas 2 was 86th, but the damage was done. Overextended and overexposed, Santa seemed destined for the pile of disposable heroes, like Dr. Laura. Putting his failed experiment on ice, Santa turned this minor setback into major catastrophe.
Did you know that drinking antifreeze will make you blind? Boy, I didn't see that coming.
Continuing his downward slide, Santa forgot about everything but killing the pain.
He'd vanish for days on end, and then you'd get the phone call, Santa's in our bathtub. Well, you can't imagine how embarrassing that was.
Along for this December deviance were a bevy of beautiful women, all of whom were more than happy to provide Santa with illicit Noel nookie.
I did my best to be a faithful husband, but I'm only human. One time I was in Salt Lake City. Well, I come down the chimney and there's a hot little tomato. The only thing she's got on is a mistletoe garter. Well, after a while, it all gets to be too much. You say to yourself, I'm Santa Claus. I deserve a little Yuletide fun now and then. I mean, when you stop by Halle Berry's house and she meets you with four handcuffs and a bottle of scotch, I mean, what's a man to do? Sometimes being naughty is just so damn enticing, even for Santa.
These nights of snow-covered sin left the married merrymaker full of self-loathing, a condition he cured the only way he knew how. Through rampant intake of chemicals.
And you know, you tell yourself all kinds of lies when you're an alcoholic. You try to convince yourself that you're in control, but no matter what anyone tells you, vodka and trail mix is not a balanced way to live. I can see that now.
But the compulsive Kris Kringle's chaotic cannonball into the swimming pool of drugs and depravity was far from over. Depressed and alone, he wondered if he'd chosen the wrong path somewhere along the way.
I mean, you look at the little people in my life, and you see how their lives are, and you wonder, would I be happier? Billy Barty. Never heard one complaint out of him. And that other one, that black kid with the failing kidneys, he always seemed to have it pretty good.
But his Lilliputian longings aside,
Santa showed no signs of slowing his ride along Route 666, even when his alcoholic intake led to some grave mistakes.
Did you know, I gave OJ a house one year. I swear to Christ, an honest-to-God house. Hell, there's kids in Armenia that'd be glad to get a lump of coal, and I gave OJ a friggin' house. Oh, the things I'd do over.
But at the height of his fame and the peak of his powers, there was no time for second guesses. Every moment spent awake was spent dealing with the stresses of fame, fortune, and the increasing expectations of stardom.
I mean, I get these letters from people who want me to give them world peace or love among all men for Christmas. I mean, why don't I just make the sun disappear? I'm not Doug Henning, you know. And don't even get me started on the lepers. Christ, you put on one big suit and a beard, and people think you're Jesus. I can't even fix my wife's gout, you know.
Santa's holly jolly party folly sometimes left him unable to handle the day-to-day tasks of mirth-making. As he was drawn deeper and deeper into a web of drunken irresponsibility, his management skills reached a Noel nadir. Crucial decisions often had to be made by underlings, sometimes with disastrous consequences. Former head of Elfin Production and shop steward, Indigo Spitz.
You know, we elves are a punctual people. Now, people don't know that about us, but if there's one thing an elf won't tolerate, it's missing a deadline. When Christmas comes, them toys gonna be ready to roll. Period. And if old Jingle Junkie can't get it together enough to help us out, then we gotta do things ourselves. That's when I step in. Sure, I majored in communications, but when the chips are down and you gotta get them toys out, I'm your man.
Without Santa's holiday vision to guide them, the elves took it upon themselves to create and manufacture that year's holiday toys. It soon became apparent that their efforts, while sturdy and long-lasting, were not in keeping with the traditional spirit of the season.
Now what you got here is your chopstick. I mean, the kids will love this one. I mean, what do you want from me anyway? It beats the hell out of that PlayStation, if you ask me.
Equally bad was a mass marketing flyer, which, due to a printing error, told parents to bring their children to Satan's Workshop. The season was an unmitigated failure. Within a year, Spitz would leave the North Pole altogether, though to this day, he blames the man in red for the December debacle.
I did what I had to do. I made sure that every kid got a present. If they didn't want a beard of bees for Christmas, they can take it up with Fatty.
His new friends in tow, Santa spent long hours in a haze of narcotic stupor. Magdalena Claus remembers the night she knew she'd had enough.
I just remember watching the American Music Awards. And there, in the front row, was my Santa. And with him was that no-good tramp, Courtney Love. Well, I thought he'd just gone out for a pack of smokes. And there he is with that yeasty whore. Well, at that moment, I knew that something had to change.
Coming up, Santa continues his never-ending slide into a pitiful chasm of blackness.
Who knew that Courtney would steal my songs and then dump me?
And later, Santa's snow globe of sadness becomes ho-ho happiness once again. When Behind the Christmas continues.
Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. It is our annual Christmas in July show, and you're listening to the Rick Emerson Show original radio production, Behind the Christmas, which now continues.
After the bitter, soul-crushing failure of Christmas 2, Santa Claus had fallen further and further and further and further and further still into a nightmarish black abyss of drugs and kinky sex. The low point came in November, when a home video showing Santa and girlfriend Courtney Love engaged in hardcore sex showed up on the internet. Despite a lengthy court battle, the video became an instant bestseller and cemented Santa's reputation as a man whose time had passed. His estranged wife continued to watch over the family business, convinced that a rebound was on the horizon.
I mean, we always had the company, and that kept us above water in the lean years. Although we had to make some sacrifices. I mean,
The 8 tiny reindeer had to go. We could only afford 2 huskies and a penguin.
But Lady Fate had one more shoe to drop. Klaus family lawyer, Eli Zabransky.
The so-called merry working elves were in reality underfed school children from Nicaragua. And to make matters much worse, the rightful owners of these children, Nike Incorporated, hadn't been paid for them in years. So that had to come to an immediate stop.
The family business hobbled and his relationship on the rocks. Santa had nowhere left to turn. That's when a voice from the past emerged to lead Santa out of his private pain cave. Former Vice President Al Gore.
Now, Scout was always there for me, and when the chips were down, he was a true friend. I know that he loves Magdalena, and that all he needed was a helping hand to get back on his feet. You see how I used the hand and feet together there? You know, he's got a couple bucks for some smokes.
Al found the floundering Father Christmas holed up in a cheap hotel, drinking away his last few dollars on cheap wine and memories.
He didn't look anything like the Scout I knew. He was pale and he smelled vaguely of Bengay and stool. Can I say stool? I guess it's better than saying shit, right?
Al convinced the Winter Wonder kind to clean up his act and to give Santahood another shot.
So I got up, cleaned the larger chunks out of my beard and took a shower. And when I stepped out, I stood in the mirror naked and I said, God damn it, man! You're an elf! Now what are you gonna do with your life?
Coming up.
I mean, all it takes is one look at Al Gore and you realize the danger of ruining your whole life. I mean, Christ Almighty.
When Behind the Christmas continues. The visit from the vanquished VP was just the catalyst Santa needed to set him back on the right path. With the help of friends and family, he slowly battled his way back from the brink of certain death. Fighting off the myriad demons of drugs, depression, and alcohol, he strove to rebuild his shattered life.
You see this? It's my 90-day coin. I'm a new person now. One who won't be tempted by drugs or booze or promiscuous. Are you going to drink that?
In his long and eventful life, Santa Claus has played many roles, from ecstatic elf to down-and-out December dreamer. But these days, the role that St. Nick plays is that of contented family man, doting father, and successful business merchant. His life once again on the straight and narrow, he relishes every chance to share the holiday cheer he loves so much with those he considers his friends and neighbors, the good little boys and girls of planet Earth. As time went on, Santa reclaimed much of what he lost. His business, once faltering, now flourishes. And as for Mrs. Claus, she's just happy to have back the man she calls St. Nick.
People always say, how did you do it? Why did you take him back? And I say, I did it for the children.
For the children, indeed. For without this General of Jolly, this Wizard of Winter, this Hero of Holly, this Mogul of Mary, this Titan of Tinsel, this Chancellor of Cheer, life would be just a little darker for the child in all of us. Good night, and Merry Christmas. Coming up, Al Gore asks if he gets paid for this.
Excuse me, do I get paid for this?
No.
Department store. A gang of kids came over and loved me.
have yourself a good time. But remember the kids who got nothing while you're drinking down your wine.
Emerson Radio Program. It is 4th of July. There you go. Rick Emerson Original Radio Show Production. Santa Claus Behind the Christmas.
That was a really good ending.
It is.
I love hearing that.
I never realized how much like Arrested Development that does kind of sound that well. Well spotted by Aaron.
Because you have all the endings that don't ever happen.
And it's, you know, coming up. Yeah, and I never, you know, many years before the fact.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I should back, I'll back bill Ron Howard for that.
Right. Yeah. And the, maybe
and the,
a movie.
And the Bad Santa guys, too. Totally, yeah.
How many years ago did you make that?
2001.
Wow.
So, yeah, 6 years ago this Christmas. So, all right, there you go. Behind the Christmas, starring Clyde Lewis, ladies and gentlemen, and myriad the other folks. All right, we're going to thank senior radio correspondents Steve Kastenbaum, Amanda Moyer, Jim Roop, Lisa Goddard, and Aaron Geek in the City Duran from geekinthecity.com and filmpeopleradio.com, where there's lots of crap happening.
Out cause of crap. Download the Temple of Doom commentary. It is 2 hours of good fun.
There you go. Rick Emerson Show, produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, Tim Riley. Our PA today is James Robinson, and for Scotty J. And, of course, the gatekeeper, Dave Zinn. Like us next, Don and Mike at 7. We'll see y'all tomorrow at 11 a.m. Kids, have a safe 4th of July. Happy Independence Day to you. As always, don't let the bastards grind you down. Do try to help the retarded and watch out for snakes. See y'all tomorrow. Bye.